anti-immigration scaremongering and hideous othering, then you probably find this story as fascinating as I do. And I use the word fascinating advisedly. The government is issuing guidelines to police that they should, in some circumstances, issue more biographical detail of people suspected of committing serious crimes. I think the rationale behind it is to puncture the potential claims of cover-up, the lies that have been told in the past about the authorities deliberately misleading or keeping information from the public. But pandering to liars rarely works out well. Will it this time?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Keir Starmer is due to co-chair virtual talks ahead of Donald Trump's summit with Vladimir Putin on Friday. The Prime Minister will hold discussions with Kiev's European allies this lunchtime. He'll then be joined by Mr. Trump and the Vice President, J.D. Vance. Ukraine's President Zelensky has warned he will reject any proposal to hand over the Donbass region to Moscow. He's raised concerns about what could be agreed in his absence in Alaska this week.
It's impossible to talk about Ukraine without Ukraine, and no one will accept that. But they cannot agree on anything about Ukraine without us. I truly believe and hope that the US President understands and realizes that.
Police chiefs are being encouraged to disclose the ethnicity and nationality of some people who are charged. The new interim guidelines follow a series of controversial cases in which authorities were accused of covering up suspects' backgrounds. It's hoped the change will combat misinformation on social media. The Shadow Work and Pensions Secretary, Helen Whateley, has welcomed the move.
We need to see more transparency from the police about the ethnicity of suspects. Clearly, there has been suspicion about the police withholding information in the past when it's been very much on a case-by-case basis. So they should be leaning in to be sharing information with the public because people deserve to know as much information as is possible to give.
Privacy groups have criticised an expansion of facial recognition technology by police in England. The Home Office says the cameras will be used to identify serious offenders with appropriate safeguards in place. The camera vans are to be rolled out in 7 force areas following trials in London and South Wales. Learner drivers are to be quizzed on their life-saving skills in an update to the theory test. Questions about CPR and defibrillators will be added from early next year. The Driver and Vehicle Standards Agency says motorists are often first on the scene when someone suffers a cardiac arrest. The Treasury is reportedly looking at ways to raise more revenue from inheritance tax. It's understood the rules around gifting, allowing people to pass on assets tax-free before they die, could be tightened. In the city, the FTSE 100, a short time ago, was at 91.65. That's up 17. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 15. LBC weather, another warm and sunny day for most places. A few thunderstorms possible later. A high of 33 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after 10 and, I'll ask you. Can you remember, we had a caller about a year ago who was from an Eastern European country, and to my shame I can't remember which one, but there was a phrase, like a figure of speech in her home country about having your destiny decided in a room that you weren't in. We were talking about Ukraine at the time, and maybe, was she Hungarian perhaps? It was a brilliant line, and I can't remember it, so I am, what do they call it? Crowdsourcing. I'm crowdsourcing that question. This is the Hive Mind in action live on LBC. In fact, it's the Hive Mind every day, isn't it? Because we muddle together towards answers or pursue illumination, not always successfully. And to that end, I should tell you that if you try to send me a WhatsApp this morning, you will not be successful. Something is wrong with the system. So do not WhatsApp me. You can still text me on 84850, and you can, of course, still call me, although it would be a bit weird if you did that, because you don't know what question I'm asking you yet. Oh, go on, I'll tell you anyway. 03456060973. So there are two cases currently that seem to me to be profoundly relevant to the police's decision, or police being told that they can reveal the ethnicity of a suspect in a high-profile case. There is one that has concluded and seen the culprit sent to jail, hopefully for the rest of his life. And there is one that has not concluded, but in which the ethnicity of the suspect was revealed very quickly to the public. But we can't talk in detail about that because obviously the case is yet to conclude, and the rules governing that sort of thing, as you well know by now, are very strict. I got distracted then by the number of people who pay more attention to this programme than me or any of my colleagues do, because the quantity of people who have remembered exactly what the line was and what the country for context was is extraordinary. I'll share it with you shortly because I want to get this up and running first. The policing minister has said that the government will want police to release these details in most cases, in what she welcomed as a positive step. And I honestly don't know, because the problem with people like me, how long have you got? But if you are not, and it may be that there's something wrong with me, but I don't spend my life chomping at the bit about immigration, and I don't spend my life encouraging you to chomp at the bit about immigration. It's a lonely place in the UK media, but it is not an unpopular one, it must be said, to not dedicate day upon day upon day, page upon page upon page, to coded invitations to hate people based upon their origins, on their ethnicity, or on their arrival status in this country. So the dangers of that discourse only really bubble up in our lives occasionally, very occasionally. I am, for example, not more perturbed or disgusted by a crime committed by a brown man than I am when the same crime is committed by a white man. Again, that seems to be quite a rare position to adopt in the UK media at the moment, and indeed in UK politics, where men are queuing up to pretend that they care about women's rights or women's safety, even as they invite somebody locked up for battering his own ex-girlfriend to sit alongside them in the House of Commons. It's extraordinary. And Robert Jenrick joining the chorus this weekend by expressing deep concern about his own daughters being potential victims of crimes committed by foreigners or immigrants or asylum seekers, as if the danger of being a victim of a crime committed by, well, most likely, of course, in the context of sexual abuse and child sexual abuse, it would be somebody known to the victims and often a family member, or just a white bloke. Apparently that's less worrying, that's less scary to people like Honest Bob Jenrick, but it isn't to me. Some polling out today saying the number of women who were worried walking the streets, the number of women who were worried when they're walking the streets, anyone who's ever paid any attention to any of this will tell you, is always high, because our streets, after dark in particular for lone women, have never been safe, never been completely safe. But here we are. The only occasions in which this dismal discourse reaches the lives of people who aren't either committed to fostering hatred or victims of the determination to foster hatred, the only time it happens, the only time it bubbles over, is when people deliberately seek to incite violence and to provoke terrible behaviour on our streets after a crime has been committed by somebody believed to be foreign. Oh, man, how depressing is that? It's 2025. And we're sitting here talking as if it were the most matter-of-fact and ordinary thing in the world about people trying to cause violence on our streets, trying to incite pogroms, I'm afraid is an accurate word, because a crime is believed to have been committed by somebody who is foreign. Extraordinary. I was reading David Aranovich's rather splendid Substack blog this morning, and he has details of precisely how Jewish people were maligned and demonized in identical ways in 1930s Germany to the ways in which Muslim people are being denigrated and maligned in this country at this point in our history. That's why the date depresses me. Somebody's alleged ethnicity is going to be used to incite riots on our streets and to encourage people, in the case of the riots in the aftermath of the Southport murders, men who, 40% of whom had been reported themselves for domestic abuse, but they get to be great crusaders, vigilante crusaders for women's safety somehow, or for people's safety, in the context of these very deliberate provocations. And that's what they do. You know, they claim they're just asking questions, but the questions they're asking might be, are we being lied to? And if we are, what are you going to do about it? Those are the questions that I'm asking. Or they go further and actually encourage people to set fire to hotels and then get championed by Daily Mail columnists, Daily Telegraph columnists and Daily Mail columnists, despite the fact that the evidence of their criminality is right there in black and white. And that's the country we live in now, the country where these fires are being deliberately started. I'm not using the word easily. I'm not using the word easily, because I don't think they have been started as easily as some people were hoping. When, quotes, journalists, end quote, started using the word tinderbox as if it was going out of fashion, there seemed to be a thirst for violence, didn't there? There seemed to be a deep desire to see more hideous scenes on our streets. Of course, never in the communities where the people calling for violence or the people inciting violence actually live. It's always in other communities. It's always other people that have to clear up the mess afterwards. And I suppose those who cleared up the mess after the riots in the aftermath of the Southport murders represent the Britain that I belong to. They represent the country that I am proud of, the people who did the cleaning up of the mess, as opposed to the people who committed the acts of violence or championed the people cheering them on, or indeed egging on the actual rioters. So that's when it appears in our lives, and that's why the question this morning is a little more nuanced than you might originally allow, because pandering to liars, is it ever the right thing to do? And is that what is happening here? So in order to stop people lying about the ethnicity of a suspect in a crime, the police are being encouraged to reveal the ethnicity. And the two cases involve the Southport murders, where people deliberately disseminated things that they categorically could not have known to be true because they were not true. So, you know, regardless of what motives you want to assign to these clowns and ghouls, there's no earthly way they could have known that what they were sharing was true, because it was not true. So, you know, whether you're treating Andrew Tate as a more trusted news source than the BBC is, I guess, a matter of personal prejudice. But it was hideous what you caused, what they caused by doing that. And then you had the recent event in Liverpool, where a car was driven into a crowd of people, about which we will say no more, except that the ethnicity and the asylum status, even, of the suspect was revealed with relative speed. It was revealed relatively quickly. And you cannot, I'm afraid, equate correlation with causation, but it seems possible, at least, that the decision to reveal that it wasn't a brown man or a black man, or an immigrant. The decision to make that clear in the case of that suspect possibly explained why that event was not greeted with public violence, was not greeted with people setting fire to hotels or championing women calling for pogroms or pretending to be simply asking questions when you are quite obviously hoping to incite violence. For whatever reason, because it turns you on or because you think it will be politically advantageous to you, or quite possibly both. So this is my problem. I think that's why they're doing it. I think that they are disclosing, that they are encouraging, the government is encouraging the police to disclose the ethnicity and nationality of a suspect charged in a high-profile case in the hope of damping down, dowsing violence in the hope of preventing violence that would occur if the suspect was revealed to be from a certain demographic. But I've asked you a million times, what happens if it is from a certain demographic? What if it is from someone who is staying in an asylum hotel, for example? I mean, hotel is a slightly rich word to use in that context. They are buildings that were once traditional hotels but are now sort of holding facilities for people expected to get by on £9 a week. But hey, don't let me spoil your feelings of fury and hatred by providing you with a few facts. You carry on chomping away at that bone of hatred. That is the bit I can't get past. And I don't understand how intractable I'm finding this problem, because by now you'd have thought that we'd have either realised we were wrong and that this isn't the enormous elephant in the room, or people would have realised we were right and changed the plans accordingly. If I tell you that the suspect charged in this case is a middle-aged white man from Kidderminster, you are not going to cause a pogrom or start setting fire to the hotel in the Bullring, are you? That's the calculation that the government is making. So what happens when a suspect is revealed to be either an immigrant, a foreign-born person, or an asylum seeker, or just simply a Muslim? Because the demonisation of that faith continues apace, indeed probably at a greater pace than it has for a few years in this country. What happens if it is somebody from the what could we call it, the difficult demographics, the demographics that the men who 40% of whom have been reported for domestic abuse themselves will take to the streets to attack if a suspect is believed to belong to that demographic? So what happens? So under my glorious rule, I'd have come down much, much harder on the people who lied. I know that there's a perception that the authorities came down pretty hard anyway, but I'd have gone after the provocateurs. I'd have gone after the people who used social media to disseminate lies more effectively and made that the deterrent, so that in the event of a terrible crime being committed again and before the public are fully aware of the facts, because the police have to be left to do their job, I would have made life a lot more uncomfortable for the inciters and provocateurs of public violence. I maybe wouldn't have been able to. I may be demonstrating naivety of the law here, but that's where my feelings take me, is if somebody is trying to start a pogrom, I know that some of them are too clever to actually say it, but make that the target of legislative change, or make that the target of policy change, rather than appeasing the liars. And that's the first question. Does this policy appease the provocateurs? Does the decision to release the ethnicity of a suspect, and in a massive majority of cases, it is going to be a middle-aged white bloke in almost any crime that you're talking about. That's just counting. It's not even an opinion. So does the decision to release or disclose, or the decision to encourage the disclosure of the ethnicity and nationality of suspects in a high-profile case appease the liars or defuse the lies? I honestly don't know. I lean towards this being a mistake. I really want to be wrong. I really want to be wrong. Because what you're trying to prevent is the bubbling up of violence and hatred on our streets, which will never bubble up if the suspect is a middle-aged white man like me. But we know it will bubble up if the suspect is, for example, a brown-skinned asylum seeker. And therefore, I just worry that they're playing with fire on this stuff. I mean, if the first question is, does this just appease the liars or diffuse the lies? And obviously I want you to, I mean, it could be both, couldn't it? 03456060973. But let's go back to basics on this as well. My WhatsApp is working now, so 03456060973 has a double purpose. You can phone me, you can WhatsApp me. But I wonder if we need to go back to basics on this one and actually work out whether or not there are different answers to the question of why they are doing it. Why are they doing it? In short, it's because the authorities are constantly being accused of hiding the identities of men when they are believed to be asylum seekers. So if they revealed that they were asylum seekers, what do these people think is going to happen? So actually, let's begin with this. Why are they doing this? Because if your answer to that question is similar to mine, then I don't see how you can be in support of it. Because when the demographic of a suspect suits the bigotries and prejudices of the race rioters, you're kind of telling them to fill their boots on. You can tell from my voice that I really hate the fact that I'm still in the same place on this story, having talked about it with you at least twice before. But I can't see any other answers to the questions that I'm asking. So in a way, that's the first urgent inquiry. Why are they doing this? Why is the government encouraging the police to disclose the ethnicity and nationality of suspects charged in high-profile cases? Why are they doing it? 0345-6060-973. Hit the numbers now. And then, once we've established your answer to that question, or you can swerve it entirely and come straight in on the next one, is it an attempt to appease liars, to defuse lies, or both, or something else? I can't wait to hear what you've got to say about this, because I think it might turn out to be one of the trickiest domestic issues of recent years. I really do. And perhaps it already has, you know. It's 20 past 10.
LBC.
LBC is investigating the impact of over-tourism. Sheila Fogarty was joined by the UK General Manager at Intrepid Travel, Joanna Reeve.
Over-tourism is excess negative impact on a destination, something that negatively impacts the local community. We want to tackle the problem, not just pick it up and move it somewhere else. Mm. For us, our how is very much around small intimate groups.
Listen back to the full interview, thanks to Intrepid Travel, on the LBC app.
DJ! At PlusNet, we think switching broadband should be as easy as flicking a switch.
Switch!
With One Touch Switch, our team will handle all the admin, help you wave goodbye to your old broadband provider and get set up with us instead. Switch to PlusNet today and get fast and reliable full fiber. That's A++.
DJ!
Plus. New customers only, 24-month contract, limited availability, terms apply.
Introducing the Ford Capri, rewired for the electric age. And now you could win one. Take a test drive in the new all-electric Capri to enter. And you could win the icon rewired. Search Win a Ford Capri. Go electric with Ford. To enter, book a test drive online by 31st August and complete by 30th September. T's and C's apply. 25 plus only. For details, see ford.co.uk.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
22 minutes after 10 is the time, and it was a little bit of a split decision on whether the caller was from the Czech Republic or Slovakia, but at the time it would have been Czechoslovakia, and the phrase was about us but without us, as your country gets carved up by foreign governments and foreign leaders, and you're not even in the room to discuss it. About us but without us, the experience of the Czechoslovakian people, I presume in the period after the Second World War, and that potentially as the experience of the Ukrainian people on Friday. So thank you, Hive Mind, for reminding me of that. And now let's get stuck into this question. Why are police being told to reveal suspects' ethnicity in high-profile cases? I should have said police officers, past or present, particularly welcome to comment on this, on the wisdom of it, perhaps. But I think, actually, we go back further this morning and ask why they're doing it. Because that might, if it's answered honestly, prove the point of how dangerous it is. Anyway, Bob's in Durham. Bob, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. I'd just like to say that I pretty much agree with what you said. I think it's appeasement of racists, basically. The question that springs to my mind is, God forbid if there's a rape or a murder at the end of my street. Mm. As someone who's not involved in any way, why do I need to know the ethnicity of the person that's involved? It's not information that I should be party to. It's literally just saying, if it's a white bloke, everyone's going to go, oh, no, another one. If it's a brown-coloured bloke, it's the racists are going to be out, aren't they, protesting and kicking off and doing the usual thing.
Why do I simply need to know? I mean, I just spent 20 minutes trying to come up with a phone-in question, and you've come on the first caller on 10 seconds in. Why do I need to know the ethnicity of someone who's committed a crime at the end of my road?
It's none of my business, is it? If they haven't got someone and they're putting a description out for a suspect, then absolutely, because that could help identify that person. But if they arrest someone and they know, they're fairly sure it's that for guilty.
And they've brought charges, remember? They've brought charges,
yeah, exactly.
So they've done the detecting and the case is unfolding. Can I use your name in this as I move forward? Can I say, why does Bob need to know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Why does Bob need to know? Why do I need to know? Unless you're looking at everything through the lens of these claims about medieval approaches and medieval attitudes, not obviously talking about the bloke who publicly boasts about grabbing women by their genitals. That's just locker room talk. Or not talking about the bloke who ended up in the House of Commons despite being locked up for battering his ex-girlfriend. He was ushered into the chamber by Nigel Farage. We're talking about the other men with medieval attitudes that can't be trusted. Yeah. And that is the reason why you need to know whether it was one of them that committed the crime at the end of your street.
I think what we need to do is exactly the people who are spreading the misinformation after the horrible incidents in Southport. That's what caused it. It wasn't people getting angry because the perpetrator was brown-skinned. It was people getting whipped into a frenzy by people saying, oh, they're all coming to get you, you can't walk the streets anymore.
It was worse in a way. It was people saying they're not telling you the truth about this.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Deliberately keeping the truth from you, which was just a blatant lie. And yet that is what made people angry, I think. It's easy to forget that it wasn't just the desire to set fire to hotels. It was also a slightly more justifiable anger born of the false belief that people were being deliberately lied to or misled.
Yeah, so absolutely.
That's the tinder. That's the tinderbox. Why do we need to know? Why does Bob need to know? Why do you need to know? Why do I need to know? 03456060973, to which one response might be, they're staying in that former hotel at the end of the road, and I deserve to know. Well, okay then, that's fine. Why aren't you more exercised by the, what was the figure in Epping? That was 1,900 other men who'd been accused of violent crimes. I need to double check that. Why don't you want to know what buildings they're in? What are you going to do? Why aren't you picketing outside their buildings? See? Why do we need to know? And the more you think about it, the harder it gets not to see this as a massive, massive misstep. Thank you, Bob. Alan's in Southport, appropriately enough. Alan, what would you like to say?
Yeah, hi, James. First time caller.
Welcome.
Just wanted to say, I was at both of these events, well, relatively so. I was in Liverpool for the trophy parade, although I didn't see the events that eventually panned out.
And I know you know this, but we'll say no more about those events because that case is still to come to court, and you live in Southport, so the terrible murders that happened there last summer were on your metaphorical doorstep.
Yeah, and knowing the ethnicity or status of the attacker in Southport wouldn't have affected my view of anything or stirred me to take action. I was, the thing was about the death of these poor girls.
It's as if we could somehow have been more upset and disgusted than we were when we knew nothing about the culprit, and I don't think we could have been.
No, absolutely. I was travelling home from the Liverpool event when I saw the news reports identifying the
suspect.
The suspect of what was being done, and I couldn't believe why they'd done it and what the future ramifications
might be. Did you feel even a tiny scintilla of relief when they released that information? Because you could then be confident that we weren't going to see a repeat of what we saw in the aftermath of the Southport murders.
On that level, yes.
Yeah, there you see. There it is. That's the reason they're doing it, isn't it? And that looks like appeasement.
I was afraid all afternoon, given the volume of people in the city centre, that it was such a sitting target for something horrible to happen.
I did say let's not talk about that anymore, but you've completely ignored me, which is fair enough. I probably would as well, but I am obviously very wary of live cases, but those two cases do sit in relief to each other. But what if a crime, a terrible crime, was committed by somebody who did fit the demographics beloved of the race baiters and the increasing number of politicians and pundits who do seem to believe that a crime is worse or better according to the colour of the skin of the person that committed it, or the immigration status of the person that committed it. The thing that stays with me a lot, and there was a version of this in the Guardian newspaper yesterday, is a certain type of man who thinks that women belong to them. Robert F. Kennedy in Donald Trump's administration recently shared a post from members of his church calling for women to be denied the vote. This is a medieval attitude, of course, that women belong to men, and therefore incomers or immigrants have no right to abuse our women because that is our exclusive right. And that perhaps explains why 2 in 5 of the men charged in the aftermath of the Southport riots turned out to have themselves been reported for domestic abuse in the past. That's a really ugly thing, and it all feeds into the question we're asking, which is, why are they doing this? Why do we need to know the ethnicity of a suspect who has already been charged? Who's it going to help? How is it going to help? What is it going to help? And there are answers to those questions, and I need to hear them. Thomas Watts is here first with your headlines.
President Zelensky is due to take part in virtual talks with European leaders and Donald Trump. The US president is preparing to meet his Russian counterpart in Alaska for one-on-one talks on Ukraine on Friday. Police are being encouraged to disclose the ethnicity and nationality of some suspects charged in some cases. The updated guidelines follow a series of controversial cases in which authorities were accused of a cover-up. The policing minister, Dame Diana Johnson, has rejected criticism of a wider rollout of facial recognition cameras in England. She's insisted they will be used in a measured, proportionate way to identify serious offenders. LBC weather, warm and sunny for most, with thunderstorms developing later, a high of 33 degrees.
This is LBC.
The seagull says, your IKEA food favourites are now available in Brighton. Meatballs, plant balls, fish and chips. All delicious. Especially the chips. Yum. IKEA Brighton, open 14th of August. IKEA, the wonderful everyday.
Take my money.
You, and you. Gather in the name of chicken. For thou shalt not eat alone. The KFC popcorn bucket. 60 pieces for $5.99. Get the deal. Believe in chicken. KFC. Until 31st of August. Subject to availability. Participating restaurants only. Not available on delivery. See website for full T's and C's.
Chase is the digital bank that puts you first.
What does that mean?
Well, most people don't bank 9 to 5. That's why Chase customer support is available 24/7.
So I can contact them whenever works best for me.
You've got it. Mm. You can chat to a real person through the app.
That's handy.
And you can always call up to speak with them directly.
Hello. Now we're talking.
Join the UK's number one bank for customer satisfaction. Chase. See what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents. Eligibility applies. Claim based on YouGov UK Banks and Building Societies rankings 2024. Verify at chase.co.uk/YouGov.
Mr. Thing is enjoying a lovely summer's day. He's trimmed the hedge, he's cut the grass, and best of all, he's just had 25% snipped off his home care cover, meaning his boiler, electrics, plumbing and drains are now covered for less. Chop chop, sign up today. This offer ends soon. Search British Gas Home Care Cover. Watch out for that rake, Mr. Thing. Ouch! Too late. British Gas. Taking care of things. T's and C's apply. Offer not available to existing home care or boiler service contract customers. Ends 9th of September 2025.
40 million people listen to commercial radio each week. That's 80 million ears, give or take. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
10:33 is the time. Why do we need to know, why do you want to know the ethnicity or nationality of a suspect charged in a high-profile case? To which the government's response might be, because it will prove that the massive majority of these cases do not involve people from the ethnicities and nationalities that an increasing number of pundits and politicians pretend to believe that they do. In which case the question becomes, will that work? It was Hegseth, the defence guy, not Robert F. Kennedy, the health guy, who has shared posts from his own church calling for women not to have the vote. Kennedy, of course, is the vaccine sceptic in charge of the American health system now, and it was at the Centre for Disease Control and Prevention a couple of days ago that a man fired hundreds of rounds because he is angry about vaccines. Make of that what you will. A police officer dead. He only graduated last March, died in hospital after being wounded. No civilians injured. Happened on the 8th of August. And the man responsible died from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. So here is a consequence, perhaps, of vaccine skepticism and vaccine propaganda. But the ethnicity of the man involved had... he succeeded in killing members of the public, I doubt would have been pertinent to the story, which is kind of pertinent to the story we're talking about today. Why? Scott is in Cramlington in Northumberland. Scott, what would you like to say?
Hiya, James.
Hello, mate.
I think the truth is always a good place to start, right?
Yes.
And these people who were lying, apparently, well, not apparently, definitely, about that monster, the South Poor, absolutely horrible person.
Yes.
That would have, if there was a weird time, and it was when nobody knew anything about it, and speculation happened, and apparently that disgusting Tate was going around saying, he was straight off a boat. I didn't hear any of that, actually.
Sure.
But I don't spend loads of time on social media.
Very good. That's why you sound so cheerful, Scott.
Probably. The truth is always a good place to start, but the problem is they will have to deal with the truth. So if it is somebody who's just hopped off a boat from France, right,
yes,
and they've done something like that, that is going to anger people, right, more than it's going to anger people that, I don't know, you see online often, yeah, people getting doorstep that have been chatting their kids online. Most of them are white men, right?
Yes, that's
so
true.
People are, that's in their psyche, and people are aware of that. I don't discriminate. I hate them all, right?
Same.
I'll put them in jail for a long time.
Same.
And if you just got off a boat, or if you recently arrived in this country, and you've committed a serious offence like that, you're gone, right? Most people agree with that. That's not controversial. But the problem is, right, correct, with the South Pole thing, it's been used in a funny way. Starmer was on the telly telling how he would not tolerate any of anything. And he wasn't talking about the murder. He was talking about the people in the streets. It was just so off, right? And the people...
Well, he was doing both. I mean,
he wasn't.
Well, hang on, he sent more people to jail than pretty much anybody else in this country.
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the speech he made after the event.
Oh, okay. Well, no, because his job was to calm things down at that point in time.
Yeah. People protesting in the streets, fair enough, but do you know what? He was more bothered about the people protesting in the streets.
He promised you he wasn't. He categorically wasn't.
It's come across that way.
Because that was his job that day, mate.
That was a disaster.
His job that day...
But listen, don't make me
his spokesman, but his job that day was to calm violence that was still unfolding. In the context...
In the context of
the murders, they'd got their man. So that wasn't his problem or his priority at that point. Right. As a former director... No, I've got to say this, because I disagree with you. That's the first thing you've said that I disagree with. As a former director of public prosecutions, that is literally what he chose to dedicate his working life to before he came prime minister. The idea that he is unmoved or untroubled by hideous murders is just grossly unfair, mate. And the fact that that speech was directed at one purpose and one purpose only, which was to defuse the violence and to remind people that they risked their own liberty and their own safety by being on those streets and conducting those acts and engaging in those acts of violence was literally the job he had to do that day. But I'm not going to have an argument about this because there's no point. It's like a rock and a hard place. What I do want to know is what you think would happen, because I like what you say about the truth being the best possible starting point. But let's go back to that crime, which we can talk about. And what do you think would have happened if the culprit in that case did tick all of the demographic boxes that the race baiters and the pogrom fans and the violence cheerleaders claimed that he had to, because that's what's always worried me, Scott. What if that was correct time?
To be honest with that, the guy was a second generation immigrant, and he was not white. I don't know what religion he was.
Christian. He was raised a Christian. His parents were very, very devout churchgoers.
An Al-Qaeda manual in his possession, which would guess, you know, it doesn't take a genius to figure out, he was using that.
But we know that, because if you followed the case, it had nothing to do with ideology. If you follow the case, you'd know that he had a fascination with violence. So some of the stuff that he downloaded...
Big feelings, because he was on the map, wasn't he?
No, if the stuff that he downloaded from the internet demonstrated a deep passion for all forms of violence. So an easily available manual that Al-Qaeda had published was going to turn him on, mate. It had nothing to do with ideology or Islam. It was just, and this is a simple case of following what happened in, no, you can't disagree with me on that, because this is what happened in court. I thought you didn't spend a lot of time online.
I'll tell you what else, though, James.
Go on, mate.
The police in the fire, I can't remember the exact name of the organisation, the people who look into the riots and things like that, did turn around and they did say, you know, more than once that this wasn't a right, these protests were not right wing, they weren't organised by one specific group, they were just angry parents and people out there that were concerned for the children's safety. And that is the most important thing here.
I tell you what, parents. It's astonishing that for someone who doesn't spend any time online to have arrived at all these talking points. Just one final question. Why do you think 2 out of 5 of the men who were charged after those riots turned out to have been reported for domestic abuse themselves?
Do you know what, James? There's a lot of white working class men that are willing to show their face and support the right things, and there's a few of them that will cross the line.
Two out of five's not a few, and all five of them were arrested for violence.
No, my point is that they've been arrested to begin with, so you're taking the pool of people, they're already criminals. Do you get what...
We're talking about the riots. We're not talking about peaceful protests. We're talking about the riots, literally.
No, but the people that were arrested, right... Yes. For whatever it was they were arrested for, right? You know, that's a pool of criminals there you're picking from anyway.
But so they were the rioters. Yeah. So the rioters, the people who actually took to violence in the belief believing some of the things you still believe, actually, which aren't true, that there was any ideological motive for the actions of the Southport killer, or that he had any kind of allegiance with Islamist beliefs. No, I know you think that, but it's just, it doesn't, I mean, it doesn't matter what you think, it doesn't make it true. I think he had IRA material as well. So what is he, an Islamist or an Irish Republican?
I don't know, they're all bad, aren't they?
But he's neither, pal. That's the problem. But anyway, you stay away from that social media, because clearly it's... It's 10:42, thank you. Scott, so what does it achieve? I still don't know. Why do you want to know what he did? Why do you want to know what he is, the suspect in a high-profile case, the nationality, the ethnicity? What does it change? Because, as Scott has just demonstrated, even when and I know he didn't mean to, at least I don't think he meant to, even when the truth emerges and you realise that this is a boy born in Wales and raised as a Christian, if you want to believe something different from that, there's nothing that can stop you. So even if you're given the truth, you can still believe things that aren't true. So how on earth does the truth, in this case, help? Paul's in Bristol. Paul, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Hello. First time on. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome.
I think the simple answer with this particular situation is that it's to do with reform. I think Labour are really worried at the moment about the upsurge in people saying that they're going to vote for reform. And this sort of thing is the kind of thing that plays to that crowd, to make it look like, okay, Keir Starmer, the Labour government, they're tough on this, they're serious about it.
This is designed to appeal to people who really do care more about a relatively small number of crimes committed by people from a certain demographic than they do about the massive massive, much, much bigger number, total number of similar or identical crimes committed by people from the same demographic as them. Culminating, I suppose, in becoming an apologist for a bloke who was banged up for battering his own ex-girlfriend after helping him get a seat in the House of Commons while claiming to care deeply about all women and all victims of crime.
Right, and I think that speaks to something that's kind of more sinister and alarming going on, yeah. Really, which is why I called today. You know, I've been a long-time listener, but this is really bothering me, particularly the last few days. I am on social media, like your previous caller.
How dare you?
But one of the things that's really bothered me recently is I've seen a lot of people who I would consider to be sort of moderate, you know, centre-ground kind of people, or even left-leaning traditionally.
Yeah.
Friends of mine, Christian friends of mine, I'm a Christian, I know you are too, people who have been kind of sucked into these alternative narratives. Some of it's got these kind of flashbacks for me of back in whenever it was, 2017, 2018, when the whole ISIS thing was going on and everyone was up in arms about, oh, well, the Muslims are coming, they're going to take over the country, and, you know, all this sort of rhetoric is there. And I feel like it's kind of this Tommy Robinson factor. What really strikes me is how otherwise reasonable people are kind of buying into this. I spoke, it was about the same time, the ISIS time. I have a friend who works kind of adjacent in UK intelligence, and I talked to him about this at the time, and he said, did you know 40% of our domestic terrorism alerts, and that was at that point, you know, 7-8 years ago, were coming from white nationalist groups, not from Islamist groups even. And I think that there's somehow this...
It's a distorting lens. It's a deliberately distorting lens. And the government seems to be dancing to the distorted tune rather than the reality. What if it actually is the right thing? Well, I mean, is it possible that it's the right thing to do? And that if you have statistical evidence available, that's why Scott's call is going to haunt me a little bit, because even when the facts do emerge, some people are still going to choose to believe lies or untruths or whatever they want to believe. But Starmer, I think, is nothing more than a pragmatist. He's never, I mean, the easiest thing to say about him is that he is a pragmatist, and he thinks, perhaps naively, that if everybody is given the information that they need, then they won't kick off. Because one thing you can categorically diffuse is the claim that you are being kept in the dark about things. But then they're not going to do it in all cases. So in a case where they choose not to, surely the liars and the provocateurs are going to spring up like weeds again in that territory.
Right. So you can't win with these sorts of things. I mean, I think that you could make a pragmatic case that empowering the police to be able to make decisions, you know, with their discretion in terms of what information is released, you know, subject to a risk assessment, whatever, might be a good thing.
But then you've got people who will, and people who are increasingly prominent in public life, who will accuse the authorities, who will accuse the police of being dishonest. I mean, you know, these police officers were attacked during these riots because people had sowed the seed of scepticism that the police were somehow complicit in keeping things from the British public. So here are lots of cases where we won't keep things from the British public, but here are some cases where we still will. Do you honestly think that these, I know you don't, but does anybody honestly think that the monsters who saw the Southport murders as an opportunity to canvass, to get out there and encourage violence and to draw attention to themselves before those poor little girls had even been buried? Do you really think they're going to go on the cases where the police decide not to reveal the details? That they're going to go, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, no, let's all respect the police now. Let's all acknowledge that they have to get on with their job and we'll trust their risk assessments.
Well, right. And what I think the truth is, and what the government really should be coming out and saying is, in the bigger question of immigration, is immigration has been an extraordinarily good thing for this country. We ought to be in favor of immigration. We ought to improve our processes for getting people into the country. We ought to honor our obligations from an asylum point of view, and we ought to process people fast and get the ones out who shouldn't be here.
Nobody is making that argument. And if I think that the hardest bit of what you say to recognize is the simple fact that one of the main reasons why people will cross the channel in these circumstances is because their applications are solid and sound. 70-80% of them know that their case is copper bottomed, and if they can actually get here, then under the law, under international law, because they have fled a civil war or a famine, or they've fled something that is provably awful, then they will actually be accepted. So the other big lie is that we don't know anything about them. You can't have your application processed without revealing where you've come from, who you are, and why you've left. But all of this is absent from the discourse. And that is why this latest move by the government looks like an attempt to appease people who have chosen to believe untruths. And I don't know that they are ever appeasable. Thank you, Paul. And I share your... I mean, I'm not on, oddly, it's going to sound like Scott. I'm on Blue Sky a bit, but mostly these days I'm just recommending shows that I've enjoyed and the like. But sharing articles that I've really enjoyed. But yeah, there is very much an idea abroad that the Muslims are trying to take over again. And that had been sort of successfully quelled by reality during the worst events of Islamist terrorism. The idea that I should be held responsible for IRA atrocities committed in this country in the 1970s or the 1980s is exactly the intellectual equivalent of thinking that every Muslim in the country should be held responsible for Islamist atrocities, or that every Pakistani heritage person in this country is somehow complicit in the grooming gang scandal. It's just racist. And I know that an awful lot of people now are pretending otherwise, people who would once have told the truth about it. But you can't stop telling the truth just because everybody else has. That way, madness lies.
Coming up this week on Tom Swarbrick. Is a good education still a way out of poverty? Is it still the best vehicle for social mobility to get you up on the earning scale, to get you a better life? Is that still it? Or are we in a position that there are lots of people who have worked quite hard at school, done okay, done the right thing, but they've not got a better life than mum or dad? So they might think to themselves, well, what the hell's the point? And that would be really, really, you'd be in panic stations then. Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on your radio, on Global Player, and the new LBC app.
Julie could part exchange her car. Or check out We Buy Any Car. She could be unsure if she got a good deal part exchanging. Or have cash in the bank with more bargaining power to get a bigger car for her five-a-side team. Totally played. Or total player. To get a quote in 30 seconds, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Pump six in this meal deal, please.
Let's play Rate My BP Meal Deal.
Okay.
You chose an M&S chicken and bacon pasta, Magnum ice cream and a Wild Bean Cafe iced latte. That's a 10. A perfect warm weather combo.
Ever want a holiday?
No. BP Meal Deal. One deal, millions of combinations. All for £6. T's and C's apply. Subject to availability at BP M&S stores only. For details, see bp.com/latest offers.
Ugh. Drizzly drive to the office. Ever wanted to just shove some bits in a bag? Hop on a plane. And land somewhere magnifique? Well, with Kayak Explore, it's easier than ever. Whatever your budget, wherever you want to go, simply set the amount you want to spend and Kayak finds flights that fit. Easy breezy. Search Kayak and go see for yourself.
Make the O2 your playground this summer. Test your football skills at Toka Social. Take to the skies at iFly indoor skydiving. Or challenge your friends at Boom Battle Bar. Let the kids burn off energy at Oxygen Active Play. Perfect your game at Paddle Social Club. Or test your reflexes in the world of Activate. There's something for everyone at the O2. Feeling hungry? Choose from over 30 bars and restaurants and discover flavors from around the world. Search Do More at the O2 to start planning your perfect day.
The road stretches before you, but there's trouble ahead. Stationary cars. You're faced with a McDonald's side mission. Do you A, join the ever-growing queue, or B, take the next exit and treat yourself to a glorious Mackey's?
Detouring to McDonald's.
Start your side mission today.
James O'Brien on LBC.
It is 10:52. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. So, just in the interest of facts, the most recently available numbers I can find, year ending March of this year, the UK had about 109,000 asylum applications. In 2024, France had 157,947. I don't know how many callers you've heard to LBC on other programmes. I always try to give people the truth on this one. Wondering why France doesn't keep them and why France doesn't do more when France already does more in the simple context of counting. And, of course, the answer to why people are drawn to the UK is also pretty straightforward. They have links here, whether familial links or historical ties or simple linguistic ties. Where would you rather be? In a country where you can speak a bit of the language, a lot of the language, all of the language, or in a country where you can't? It's relatively straightforward. We also know that we have, as a consequence of Tory governments and Brexit, decided to shut down the safe and legal routes from countries like Syria or Iran, which, along with Afghanistan, made up about half of those arriving last year in the small boats. And those are places where oppression of women and minorities are national sports, savage civil wars, food shortages. Throw Eritrea into the mix. That's about 20% of new arrivals here. And the government there is accused of widespread human rights abuses, and the famine is currently threatening about 1 in 5 of the entire population. That's not an opinion, that's counting. The World Food Programme has done the counting. So the other reason why they risk their lives to come here is simply because they know that their application will be processed correctly, and there is more to draw them to the UK than there is to any of the other countries that they could end up in, which is not the case, of course, with the 157,947 applications that France processed in 2024. So the discourse is completely distorted. It's corrupt. It's disgusting. And it is, I'm afraid, I fully acknowledge the existence of people who think that they have legitimate concerns, but if you're not in possession of some of the facts that I've just shared with you, or, of course, of the fact that the Southport killer was fascinated by Hitler, he was fascinated by ethnic violence in Somalia and Rwanda, he was fascinated by slavery, he was fascinated by the IRA, by Sudan, Ukraine, Korea, and by Al-Qaeda. If you're going to take that information as proof that he was an Islamist terrorist, then you are, well, you're dangerously deluded. You're dangerously deluded. And it is the dangerously deluded to whom the government are possibly pandering with this new policy. And I don't know that we've heard any meaningful challenge to that fear. But there's still time. Rick's in Aberdeen. Rick, what would you like to say?
Oh, yeah, I agree with you that it's a kind of sad that it's got to this stage that they're actually doing this announcing of ethnicity and nationality.
Yeah.
But I feel that they haven't gone far enough because they're given the option as to whether you can or not. I think it's a situation, as you've mentioned yourself, the majority of the people who actually are, who will be charged with committing these crimes will happen to be white Englishmen in England. And if it made it compulsory and, you know, for the name, age, ethnicity and nationality to be given out on all occasions, and for it to be a criminal offence for the print, press and broadcast media to decline to use all those, then, as I said, you would suddenly get, you know, you would get yourself in a situation.
I don't know how you do that, though.
Well, as I said, it's quite simple. As I said, you know, it becomes a, you know, if the police are obliged to give this out in every case, and the print, press and broadcast media are obliged to, you know.
Well, I'd never have time to do anything else. There were 1,311 violence and sexual offences. Well, hang on, let me finish. This is a statistic. We like statistics, Rick.
Yeah.
So in the 12 months up to May of this year, in Epping and Ongar alone, which is where much of the recent protest has occurred, there were 1,311 violence and sexual offences reported. Now, if you demanded that I reported all of those with the same I've got to finish this because I'm thinking out loud. I'll give you time to respond. You're saying I should be legally required to report all 1,311 of those offences with the same level of volume and space as the case being brought against a man staying in that processing centre in Epping. I'd literally have time to do nothing else on the programme.
I understand what you're trying to say, but what I'm actually...
that makes one of us.
The point I'm trying to get to
yes.
is that I'm not asking for, the police have to actually go through the procedure of all these things. When they go through the procedure of all these things, then, as I said, they already give the name and age of the person as part of the procedure. Then it's just a matter of putting ethnicity and nationality. Now, when it comes to the print press and broadcast...
Why does ethnicity matter?
Well, it doesn't. But what I'm trying to get to is to the print press and broadcast media's position here, okay?
Okay, now, sorry. I've upset you. I didn't mean to. Carry on.
Yeah, well, as I said, this is the important point.
Go on.
Because if the print press and broadcast media are going to actually comment on these things, then they have to do all four of them, name, age, ethnicity, and nationality.
But in 1,311 cases...
No. You're not hearing me out.
I'm trying to.
Yeah. And what I'm saying here is, if they are not prepared to do that, if they're not prepared to use all four terms, then they cannot comment on it at all. So you don't need to do
so
them
So it's all or nothing.
Yeah, it's a situation, but as I said, you're in a situation where you have to cut off yourself off from important news stories if you're not prepared to actually sort of say that the person just happens to be 42 and, lives in Kidderminster. They happen to be, someone who is white and English at the same time.
Or Scottish.
Means that the majority of the times that they're going to comment on this, they're going to be talking about white Englishmen. And in a
or Scottish
weeks,
men. In Scotland, there'll be white Scottish men.
Yeah, there are Scotsmen in England. In fact, the killer of Joe Cox was had Scottish origin. So I'm aware that we actually do these sort of things as well.
Too.
But it'll hit harder if it's Englishmen, I'll assure you, when they're Englishmen. You can call them Scots.
I'm glad we got to your point, and I apologise for making it harder for you to get there than perhaps it should have been, but I still think it's daft.
In a few months' time, the same people insisting on knowing about the ethnicity of people at the moment will be phoning up your colleague, Nick Ferrari, and saying, this is unfair on Englishmen. Innocent until proven guilty and all this sort of thing, because they don't like the idea of people knowing that white Englishmen are as likely to commit these crimes, if not more so.
Except that we're never going to do the conflation that we do, and I know you know this, but we're never going to do the conflation. No, nobody's ever going to try to make a point about all white Englishmen on the back of the crimes committed by one white Englishman. It simply never happens. And yet, if you're not a white Englishman, it happens all the time. A lot of black Brits have been dealing with this kind of prejudice and conflation forever. And will be possibly smiling wryly at the thought of the rest of us finally realising what that must have been like. Last word on this to Emma. I think that caller has hit it, the one before Rick. Labour are now making it acceptable in polite society, and that's the crucial distinction, not just terminally online, making it acceptable in polite society to say, when a crime occurs, well, was he brown?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky is due to take part in talks with European leaders and Donald Trump. The virtual meeting involving Keir Starmer comes ahead of Mr. Trump's summit with his Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin in Alaska on Friday. It'll take place without any Ukrainian involvement. Foreign policy expert Elizabeth Brough says she is not expecting much progress.
We may see an agreement regarding a temporary ceasefire, but again, these are two major countries negotiating over the fate of a third country, and they are doing so on the basis of not very much preparatory work.
Ministers have welcomed a push for police to tell the public more about suspects' backgrounds. The guidelines say forces should consider sharing ethnicity and nationality information in some high-profile cases. It was issued by the National Police Chiefs Council and the College of Policing. Its chief executive is Sir Andy Marsh.
This guidance applies from this morning, and we've thought it through, discussed it with partners in the courts, in the CPS, and I've spoken to every chief constable about it last week, and this will bring greater consistency to the transparency that we need, actually, when the public are very concerned about what's happening in their communities.
A Trump administration report has accused the UK of going backwards on human rights over the past year. The State Department file, published annually, claims there are serious restrictions on freedom of speech in Britain. The government says it is proud to uphold freedoms of expression. Television presenter Jay Blades has appeared in court charged with two counts of rape. The 55-year-old was not required to enter any pleas in the video link hearing at Telford Magistrates Court. He was granted conditional bail ahead of another hearing next month. A group of MPs is calling for all under-22s in England to be given free bus travel, as they are in Scotland. The Transport Select Committee says it would improve young people's access to work and skills opportunities. In the city, the FTSE 100, a short time ago, was trading at 91.61. That is up 13 points. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 15. LBC weather, cloudy to start, then another warm and sunny day. Some thunderstorms could develop later on. A high of 33 Celsius. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 4 minutes after 11, and here is a story that, oddly, and when I stumbled across it this morning, I didn't realise that it was relevant to the conversation we were having in the last hour. My rather splendid colleague Emma Corr has been working with undercover police officers in what can only really be described as precisely the area of safety for women that was alluded to frequently in the last hour. The lead for Surrey in the Violence Against Women and Girls Safer Spaces initiative has been running an operation in which undercover police officers were sent jogging at rush hour to show the level. And here the word catcalling appears in the story, and it's the word that has been used in all of the reporting, but it's a profoundly inadequate word, in my opinion. And this story appeared on the LBC website on Sunday, I think, or on Monday, and to my shame, I missed it. I just want you to imagine for a moment what level of coverage this would have received in the UK media, and possibly from some of my colleagues on LBC, if the men who were found to be sexually objectifying, shouting at, catcalling, honking, slowing down just to stare at these women, were all brown. I hate this, and I wish it didn't fall to me to do it, but what sort of coverage would this story by an LBC reporter have received if it turned out that vans full of brown men, or indeed vans full of asylum seekers, were engaged? And listen, some of them will be brown-skinned, but the idea that it is a problem exclusive to one ethnicity is so disgustingly dangerous that I still struggle to believe that some people can't see it. I increasingly believe that they can, and that they very, very consciously engage in the kind of provocations that are being engaged in now in this country. Where Nigel leads, many, many follow. So this is PC Abby Haywood, one of the undercover officers, telling Emma Corr about the behaviour that she encountered every day for the simple act of going jogging.
We get this all the time. We get catcalled, we get honked at, the staring, the hanging out of the window just to look at us, and it's so, so, so prevalent, and it is a form of harassment, and I think it needs to be known that it's a form of harassment.
And indeed, the lead, the inspector, John Vale, who leads for Violence Against Women and Girls Safer Spaces, explains why this initiative is necessary.
Not only will we be looking at the behaviours that have been exhibited, we'll also be looking at, you know, do we know them for other reasons? Do we have intelligence that, you know, they are a sexual offender? Are there other opportunities for us to help manage that risk?
So, what's it like? That's the simple question. This is something that men just don't know. There are two types of men in the world. There are men who engage in this sort of behaviour, and there are men who know next to nothing about this sort of behaviour. And actually, there's three types. There are some men who can actually just about get a foot into both camps, and bizarrely, I'm one of those men. I hesitate to tell you where I was when I encountered this kind of conduct, because I sense that you think I possibly refer to it rather too often. I do it in a tongue-in-cheek way. Yesterday, I was obviously joking when I claimed that I'd once been a builder. I did 2 weeks on a building site in South Yorkshire in 1988. But I refer to it, and I hope it comes across as tongue-in-cheek, but obviously sometimes on the radio it doesn't come across as tongue-in-cheek. We did one of those infernal viral clips a couple of years ago where I said on air that I obviously work much, much harder than the average builder. And it was a joke. And, yeah, it got clipped up. And by the time I came off air, I was being accused of all manner of horrors by the usual suspects online. Luckily, I'd said, oh, my Lord, if they clip that up, it's going to go absolutely insane, isn't it? And we found that clip as well, so I could prove that. But anyway, it doesn't matter. I went to work every morning for a fortnight in 1988 in a van full of builders. And I was fresh off the boat, as it were, from my boarding school. I was so wet behind the ears and very naive. A healthy upbringing, actually, I think, largely due to my mum, actually, when it came to respect for women and when it came to boundaries, and I didn't really need conversations about consent, but I understand now why young men do, and young women. And I thought it was amazing. The lads would deliberately drive a slightly longer route to work so that they would go through the kind of office areas of Doncaster and therefore would see a lot of women making their way to work, a lot of smartly dressed women making their way to work. And they would shout their appreciation from the window. I can't quite remember how shocked I was the first time it happened, I didn't join in. I'd have been too frightened to join in. But I kind of, by day three or four, I thought it was quite thrilling. I remember I was at an all-boys boarding school, and a lot of the women responded in what appeared to me in 1988 to be quite a positive way. But of course, I know better now. The most grim thing about being ignorant in these issues is the school uniform factor. I don't know I've ever met a woman who wasn't in some way wolf-whistled, catcalled, or commented upon when she was wearing her school uniform. During the Me Too movement, the amount of silence that women have adopted on issues that men know very little about, as I say, two types of men, the men that do it or the men who know next to nothing about it. And I think post-Me Too, we've got the third category of men who have had the scales stripped from their eyes in quite a remarkable fashion, because it happens all the time. And there are two questions here, really. There are questions about how it affects you. I don't think today is the day to have a conversation about whether undercover police officers should be doing this. I think it is absolutely the case that they should be, especially if, for example, you purport to be deeply concerned about medieval attitudes being displayed by some other men in this country. The idea that you can lean out of your window and comment upon the breasts of a young woman, for example, or reveal to her what you hope, what you would like to do to her. Or simply whistle in an alarming fashion. The idea that women exist solely to be objectified by men, or indeed to be owned by men, is indeed a medieval attitude. And it is an incredible infringement of personal liberty to break through that invisible wall of privacy and behave like this. And I don't want to sound holier than thou. When I was a 16-year-old boy, I didn't have the first idea about how wrong this was. And one of the big discoveries I made when I started doing this job and talking about these sort of things was that some women are persuaded that it's all absolutely fine, even flattering or complimentary. I really noticed when I didn't get wolf-whistled anymore, and I really miss it. But if I said to you, here's the choice, right? You have to live with the apparent difficulty of no longer being whistled anymore, and that's the price that we pay as a society for young girls in school uniforms not receiving sexual comments from men. It's weird, isn't it, this story? Somehow it's managed to upset something called the Free Speech Union, who describe it as bizarre social psychology experiments. But had you been a young girl receiving this sort of commentary, I suspect you'd think rather differently. So what happens now, 2025, 0345 6060973 is the number you need. And second question, what does it do to you? How widespread and commonplace is this today? I kind of think of it as a 1970s, 1980s practice, and yet the experiences of these undercover officers in Surrey make it absolutely crystal clear that it goes on all the time. And remember, Abby Hayward, the officer that we heard a moment ago, went on to say that the behaviour is either a precursor to something more serious or it's ignorance. And she believes it's fixable. That's where our interventions come in, to stop potential repeat offenders or to help people understand that what they're doing isn't okay. The rise in violence against women and girls is real. We're talking about women being spat at, stalked, harassed while they're just out on a run. It's just horrendous. I'd like in the first instance to... Oh, I don't know about that. I was going to say to confine it to jogging, but I don't think we should confine it to anything. I suspect that if you are in fitness clothes, you are more likely to receive this sort of commentary than almost anybody except a young girl in a school uniform. But I want you to tell men what it actually feels like when it happens. Because there's a temptation among some of us, including women of a certain age, and I mean nothing by that. There's a temptation among some of us to say, oh, it's just banter. It's just well-meaning car. If you can't wolf whistle a woman anymore, what can you do? And maybe the wolf whistling is a relatively low-level entry point for this kind of behaviour. And a lot of men who have wolf whistled women in the past are not likely to be engaging in something that's a precursor to something more serious. It may not even qualify as particularly dangerous ignorance. But we have to recognise that it's horrible to be on the receiving end of. And we can only do that if you tell us why. 0345 6060973 is the number that you need. Because if you want to protect women and girls in public places, which is precisely what this scheme is designed to do, 18 arrests for offences such as harassment, sexual assault and theft in just 18... I beg your pardon, in just 1 month. So 1 month, 18 arrests in this field by police officers who are literally pretending to be female joggers and clocking how men will treat them. So, yeah, that is first question. How much unwanted attention do you receive when you're out jogging? 0345 6060973. And how does it affect you? How old were you when it first started? Let's just talk about unwanted attention. Whatever the volume of it is, whether it's someone leaning out of a car window or whether it's someone sitting next to you on a bus. The utter, I mean, it's another reason why I find the conversations about immigration so dispiriting, because it's as if some people think that this kind of behaviour only happens when it's done by an asylum seeker. The absolutely endemic nature of this behaviour is criminally underreported, and Emma Corr has done a brilliant job of addressing that or redressing that imbalance, and we're going to help her get a little bit more flesh on these bones by simply asking women what it's like to receive unwanted attention when you're out and about. 0345 6060973 is the number you need. And I think, because this is the scheme itself, that we'll look particularly at jogging. What's it like as a woman to go jogging? How much? You may not believe me when I tell you how surprised I will be. Because this is what I discovered talking to my wife, actually, and other women after the Me Too scandal began to unfold, was that you might talk to each other about it, but you don't talk to anybody else. You just kind of accept it as a given. It's a known to you. But many, many men will be entirely unaware of how commonplace and how upsetting it can be. And that, I think, is what we want to redress here. Hit the numbers now. You will get through. 0345 6060973 is the number that you need. Two undercover officers were sent jogging at rush hour. So they're not even out all day. Well, they're be exhausted, wouldn't they, to show the level of unwanted attention that female joggers received. And in the space of a single month of rush hours, presumably 5 days a week, there were 18 arrests for a variety of offences. What is it like, okay? And there'll be someone listening to this, like 16-year-old me, who thinks it's quite fun. doesn't think it's very harmful, and perhaps might even one day engage in this kind of behaviour themselves. I want him to know why he shouldn't, all right? Not in a po-faced, holier-than-thou kind of way, but just treating people respectfully and recognising that we can all be misled and we can all end up believing things that aren't really the case. And so there's a lad there who is the next generation of catcaller. I want you to tell him what it feels like when it happens, and he will hopefully use that as a reason why he won't be engaging this kind of behaviour himself in the future. 0345 60 60 973 is the number that you need. It's 18 minutes after 11.
LBC. DJ. At Plusnet, we think switching broadband should be as easy as flicking a switch.
Switch.
With one touch switch, our team will handle all the admin, helping you wave goodbye to your old broadband provider and get set up with us instead. Switch to Plusnet today and get fast and reliable full fibre. That's A++.
DJ
Plus.
New customers only, 24-month contract, limited availability, terms apply.
The Seagull says, your IKEA food favourites are now available in Brighton. Meatballs, plant balls, fish and chips. All delicious. Especially the chips. Yum. IKEA Brighton, open 14th of August. IKEA, the wonderful everyday.
At Kia, we're excited to announce that the refined new Kia Sportage is available in showrooms now. Secure your test drive today to explore its advanced technology and stylish, sporty design. Order before the 30th of September to get 5.9% APR representative and £1,000 PCP finance deposit contribution. Search the new Kia Sportage to book your test drive. T's and C's apply. Kia Finance.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 60 60 973.
Alyssa has been listening to this programme for a while, I suspect. How many men have called up so far, James? There were a couple early doors. You always get a fella ringing in to say, well, I got my bottom pinched once when I was working in Nando's. It's not really the point, lads. I fully accept that harassment can be a two-way street in some contexts, but in the context of not being able to go jogging without inviting unwanted, well, not inviting, without receiving unwanted attention from lechy men, it's a female problem, all right? Some of the messages coming in already are alarming, but not shocking, not surprising. Tracy wants to know why men need to be told how awful it feels to receive unwanted attention. How can you not know? Well, the answer to that, Tracy, is simple, because it never happens to them. You know? How do you know what something tastes like if you've never tried it? How do you know what something feels like if it's never happened to you? It's always helpful to have something explained to you by somebody who has experienced something that you have not experienced. I'm sorry that I didn't make that more obvious. This is what Amy writes. The persistence is what is scary, James. We're told to ignore it when we're young, but when you ignore it, they become more insistent. It's like a game, and games can go too far. It's scary to think how far it could go. I run with my dog. He's not a scary dog, but he is obsessed with me and will stand up for me if he thinks I need it. I don't feel safe without him. I also run with a heavy torch at night, and I tell my other half where I'm going and when I should be back. I think there's a difficulty in seeing the link, isn't there? That's why this line from PC Abby Haywood is the one that I take away from Emma Corr's report. This behaviour is either a precursor to something more serious, or it's ignorance, and therefore it's fixable. If it's a precursor to something more serious, why wouldn't you want these fellas to be clocked? And if it's ignorance that can be fixed, why wouldn't you want it to be fixed? Answer in the Daily Telegraph today is, well, fair play to them for picking up the story, though. The answer, if you're a member of the Free Speech Union, is that it's a bizarre social psychology. Is that Toby Young's outfit? I think it is, isn't it? Oh, my days. Do you remember when he was a judge to be unfit for a job in education because some of the things he'd said about women online? It didn't stop Kemi Badenoch putting him in the House of Lords, of course, but I'm not sure he's the person. If indeed it was him, maybe there were other employees at that organisation, but I'm not sure he's the first person I'd ring up to comment on abusive behaviour towards women, abusive verbal behaviour towards women. Let's go to Bradford. Verity is there. Verity, what would you like to say?
Good morning, James.
Hello.
Good to speak to you again.
Likewise.
I was out running training for a 5K last May, and a friend shared an article with me after an incident when I'd been out training and a guy had called out of a car, you know, passing car, just, you know, making comments. And that's happened to me a few times.
Can I ask what sort of car? I mean, I don't want to be like, you know.
Well, it's hard to remember because it was kind of passing car, but, you know, it's often like whistling or just, you know, the odd sort of, you know, that kind of thing.
Okay.
The odd sort of odd word, not necessarily like a lengthy interaction or like not stopping the car or anything. It's just, it's passing because they can obviously, guy driving can see you coming up. So then it's slowing down and saying something and driving off again, or it'll be really quick, not even slowing the car down. I've also had it just coming back from a night out. So I live really near a station, so not far to go, but I can cross the main road. And then the guy just, you know, winds down his window and might shout something derogatory because there's no traffic. He's got more time to say something. And that can often be, you know, like a weekend evening. And it's busy. There are pubs and clubs in the area. I kind of expect it to happen. I think a lot of women.
I think almost all women do.
When I was training for the 5K last year, then a friend shared an article with me about specifically in the Bradford area about female police officers being undercover as runners.
Oh, okay. So this isn't the first time it's happened then.
Exactly, and trying to be undercover, and then if anybody's found harassing women, you know, there could have been a fine of up to £1,000. So trying to actively do something about it, but definitely the time of year obviously puts a lot of people off in terms of choosing to go out for a run. Obviously, not doing it at night and that kind of, or you know, when it's darker.
Do you welcome police involvement? I mean, part of me wonders whether it's a sort of orgy and stables that are going to be impossible to clean unless we can divert a metaphorical river. But if and of course the police are criminally underfunded and under-resourced, but if men were as upset by something as women are upset by this, you can't help thinking it would be a much bigger story and a much bigger priority for the police. Do you think it would work?
I think it would, because I think it would make some people think twice. But I think we have with a lot of things, we seem to have a tendency to try and fix the problem and not look at like the cause of this. Because I think it's part of a bigger conversation about all those things around violence against women and girls.
Or indeed medieval attitudes.
How you change attitudes. And it obviously comes through a lot of education. And that's really difficult when, you know, doing that, teaching teenagers, for example, you know, teenage boys, it's like the worst time in terms of...
By the time they're shouting out of the van windows, it's almost too late for the behaviour to have been nipped in the bud. I mean, it also can't be helpful when you have, and it is because the Telegraph have chosen to take criticism of this scheme from the Free Speech Union. It can't be helpful when the bloke who set up the Free Speech Union has a well-documented history of saying things like this about a female television presenter. What happened to her breasts? Put on some weight, girly. And then on another television presenter, I'm not going to say their names. I don't think that would be fair. Do her breasts look bigger than normal? I think they do. And then asking while watching PMQs about serious cleavage behind Ed Miliband's head. Anyone know who it belongs to? So if you'd been shouting this kind of thing out of van windows at women in Surrey or in Bradford, you'd have run a very real risk of getting your collar felt. but you can stick it on Twitter a few years ago and get put in the House of Lords by Kemi Badenoch. So that, I think, is the point Verity is making about this being a drop in the ocean of dealing with the widespread attitude to women that some people might describe as medieval and some people might describe as Toby or indeed Lord Young's. Lucille is in Royston. Lucille, what would you like to say?
Hiya, you're right. Thanks for having me on. So I'm a female jogger, and I started jogging after my father passed away for my mental health and to raise money for charity. And I was running in my local village just a few weeks back, and a man driving in a car rolled down his window and made the most vile gestures with his tongue at me. You can only imagine what he was doing. And to be honest, you know, like I've said to other people about what I was wearing, and like people have said, I shouldn't have to even say what I was wearing, but I feel that as I have to explain myself, I was wearing joggers, I was wearing a big baggy t-shirt, you know, I was dressed almost, you know, tomboyish. And I didn't understand what on earth went through this person's mind to think that that was acceptable. And to be honest, my first thought, and I don't know, it was, who didn't love this person enough? What happened to this person? Like, how did they get to the point where they can sexually harass women in a car and then they can just drive away?
I mean, it's possible he's going home to a wife and daughters, of course.
Absolutely. This is the thing. And it's, I've got a son, he's 10, and he's with me right now. And I just, it would break my heart if my son was like that when he was older. And I think it has to start young. The education has to start young. And it's getting worse with social media. Boys are subject to too much online. It's just too much.
I mean, hardcore misogyny online as well, which is going to sprout out as precisely the sort of behaviours that you describe. And you know, we mentioned earlier, you've got a senior member of Donald Trump's administration thinking that women shouldn't have a vote, and you've got Nigel Farage describing himself as part of the same phenomenon as Andrew Tate. So, it's a lot of genies out of these bottles, isn't there, already?
Do you know what? I was talking about the sort of a similar thing with my husband the other day, and I think it comes down to also a societal view of men as well and where they fit into society. And I'm not feeling sorry for these men or anything, but these men are, you know, with Andrew Tate and that sort of organisation, they're preyed upon. Their mental health is preyed upon. They get worse and they get worse. But I just think every woman I've ever known has been subject to some form of sexual harassment, abuse or assault. Every woman I've ever known. Whether that be a slap on the bum or, you know...
or what you experienced, which sounds pretty hideous, or whether it's just words being shouted out of a window, or just staring sometimes can be pretty hideous as well, particularly in traffic.
I mean, I'm quite thick-skinned.
Sure, but you shouldn't have to be. And it's not necessarily a strength. It's a consequence of experiencing bad things, being thick-skinned.
Absolutely. I definitely agree. And I just think, the Online Safety Act will help in a way, but I don't think it's going to resolve everything. I just worry about my son's generation and how much worse it's going to get. Like you said, when they're subject to things like Andrew Tate's movement. And misogyny online, they don't know any better. They're learning right now.
Well, at least honest Bob Jenrick has got these medieval attitudes in his sights. Unfortunately, in his worldview, they only apply to people with different coloured skin from him, which is so obviously at odds with the observable reality of any woman in this country. And any man who, like me, doesn't find that their revulsion at this kind of behaviour changes according to the ethnicity of the person doing it. 11:31 is the time. Thank you, Lucille. That is exactly what the scheme in Surrey was designed to address. That kind of behaviour. I mean, it's worse than weird. I don't know what word I'd use to describe it. It's disgusting. But what does the bloke who's doing it think? Would anyone have the guts to ring in and either reveal that you do this kind of thing, or that you've come out the other side and you look back and can actually perhaps provide some insights into what the hell was going on when you decided to do that? I doubt it, but, you know, I'll always ask. 0345 606 0973 is the number you need. Here's Thomas Watts with your headlines.
Sir Keir Starmer is due to co-chair virtual talks ahead of Donald Trump's summit with Vladimir Putin. The Prime Minister will hold discussions with Ukraine's European allies this lunchtime. They will then be joined by Mr. Trump. Three teenagers have been charged with murdering a man on the Isle of Sheppey in Kent. The 16-year-old girl and two boys aged 14 and 15 are accused of killing Alexander Cashford in Laysdown-on-Sea on Sunday. Police chiefs are being encouraged to disclose the ethnicity and nationality of some people who are charged. The new interim guidelines follow a series of controversial cases in which authorities were accused of covering up suspects' backgrounds. LBC weather, warm and sunny for most places with a few thunderstorms later, a high of 33 degrees.
This is LBC.
With Little Plus Bakery Spin, simply shop and spin to win a free Little Bakery coupon on every shop. Download Little Plus and get a little bit more at the Retail Industry Awards Supermarket of the Year. 18 plus GB residents, various prizes available, subject to availability, ends 20th of August, full T's and C's apply, see little.co.uk/spin.
Chase is the digital bank that puts you first.
What does that mean?
Well, most people don't bank 9 to 5. That's why Chase customer support is available 24/7.
So I can contact them whenever works best for me.
You've got it. Mm. You can chat to a real person through the app.
That's handy.
And you can always call up to speak with them directly.
Hello. Now we're talking.
Join the UK's number one bank for customer satisfaction. Chase. See what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents. Eligibility applies. Claim based on YouGov UK Banks and Building Societies rankings 2024. Verify at chase.co.uk/YouGov.
The advert looked genuine. A post from a household name. Experts in money. A hot opportunity. They asked for a small amount, promised a great return, took all I had, and then disappeared. Investment scammers are highly sophisticated, and every month, CEL talk to thousands of people like you who've fallen victim. Our experts can help recover your money, so head to celsolicitors.co.uk today.
CEL. Mr. Thing is enjoying a lovely summer's day. He's trimmed the hedge, he's cut the grass, and best of all, he's just had 25% snipped off his home care cover, meaning his boiler, electrics, plumbing and drains are now covered for less. Chop chop, sign up today. This offer ends soon. Search British Gas Home Care Cover. Watch out for that rake, Mr. Thing. Ouch. Too late. British Gas. Taking care of things. T's and C's apply. Offer not available to existing home care or boiler service contract customers. Ends 9th of September 2025.
Brands that use radio are 49% more likely to get noticed. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org, assuming you want to get noticed.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It's 25 to 12. What does it do to you then? Because Lucille used the phrase thick skin. That's not necessarily a good thing. I used to use that phrase a lot before I had therapy. I used to talk about, I've got very thick skin, doesn't bother me at all. And I'd grew that thick skin when I was getting beaten as a child in school. And it isn't necessarily something any child should have to grow. The phrase hypervigilance is one that I'm intrigued by as well. The idea that you're spending your life in an adrenalized state. If you are a woman jogger, a female jogger, you are potentially in a state of hypervigilance. You are expecting this kind of conduct. And I don't know that you can stay angry about it as well. So in terms of what does it do to you over the years, you could call it a thickening of the skin or a diminishing of hypervigilance or I don't like the word mellowing in this context, but you can't get angry. I remember when I was a kid, a student, some of the women I knocked about with, if they were ever on the receiving end of this sort of behavior, would be incredibly robust in their response, but I don't think they would be now. I don't know whether that's a sort of erosion of anger or just an exhaustion. But if society is continuing to treat it as normal, and Lucille's point about what boys are seeing online argues that it's more normal now, misogyny, for young boys than it was when I was growing up, even when I was in that van in Doncaster in 1988. Isn't that a question we should be asking? What does it actually do to you? And the problem with stuff like this is two things pop up immediately, don't they? You get the not all men, which often sounds a little bit plaintive, a bit whiny. It's true, but I don't know that it matters in this kind. Do we really need to recognise that not all men do this? Obviously not all men do this, but we are talking about the men who do. There aren't many other stories where you'd be talking about something done by one section of society and people from a similar demographic had to stand up and say, well, I suppose if it's in the context of race and immigration, then not all Muslims, not all immigrants is actually important and salient. But I don't want to approach it from a male... Do you see what I mean? Because one question I'm minded to ask is, how do you stop men from doing this? How do you raise boys in a way that means they would never do this? And I think that leads the responsibility where it should be left. You know, I don't want to ask questions about how you can avoid it or what you do. I want to know what it's like. I want to know what it does to you as a woman. 03456060973. But I don't think it's inappropriate to ask what you do to make sure men don't engage in this sort of behaviour. I mean, a man who realises that what they thought was sort of carry-on film-style banter was actually abusive behaviour. That must be quite a moment for that particular penny to drop. And if that's you, I'd love to talk to you about it. What did you... I don't want to ask what you got out of it. What did you think you were doing? I just don't know. 03456060973. How surprised... I mean, what would you do if you discovered your husband did it? Hand on heart, how surprised would you be to discover that your husband made gestures with his tongue towards a female jogger? Is it a divorce level? Would you blame the jogger? I honestly don't know. But what would you do? How shocked would you be? There must be, let's say, millions, given by how common this behaviour is, millions of women who possibly are on the receiving end of this sort of behaviour from other men, from other women's husbands, who can't in a billion years believe that their own husband would behave like this, but spoiler alert, he does. 03456060973. What does it do to you, and how do you break this kind of cycle of behaviour? I'm not expecting any answers to the second question, but I've got plenty to the first. So I'll keep a phone line or two free for that simple question. How do you break this cycle of behaviour? 03456060973 is the number that you need. Louise is in Brighton. Louise, what made you pick up the phone?
I picked up the phone to talk to you about what makes me feel uncomfortable as a nearly 50-year-old woman. I don't get wolf whistled and stared at when I'm running, and I don't take that personally. Maybe I'm not in the right age bracket anymore. But what makes me feel very uncomfortable is when I'm pulled up at lights, and maybe more so in summer when you might have the window down and you can feel the car to your right or left pulling up very slowly. And you can just feel the eyes on you. And, you know, I interpret it as a sign that someone is trying to exert some sort of power or control over me. It's a power game. And do they do it because they think they can? And, you know, if I had the courage, I'd look at them and I'd say, is there a problem? But I was always told, you know, just careful.
Yeah.
You know, just be careful. And it's that sense of, it renders me still, I still... Despite being confident and as a parent to a young girl and as a divorced woman who have gained so much confidence in life, but something like that renders me vulnerable. I feel sad. I feel like, oh, I just feel so hopeless. And it makes me realise, had to repeat the words, how vulnerable we are as a woman. And I just think it's not okay. I would never pull up next to someone, even if I thought he was quite a good-looking chap, and just stare at him. I wouldn't do it. Mm. I wouldn't make someone feel
And even if you did, there'd be no threat involved. There'd be no power dynamic involved. There'd be no implicit reminder that you could physically overpower him if you were so minded to do so.
And that's the thing. I think these guys who are staring at me in it to make you feel uncomfortable, are these the ones that are going to go on to commit an act of, you know, sort
of course,
violence towards women? I don't know. Maybe it's a game for them, but why should we be the butt of their game? And, you know, going back to various callers before me, one, how do we change it? Misogyny, Andrew Tate, social media, you know, even without social media. I mean, some of the boys in my daughter's school who are not on social media, even they, I think it just comes down to what goes on at home and what you're taught from the get-go, from the start. what's okay, what's not okay, how to treat women, adults, and also what's going on the streets. You know, you go and hang out in the centre of Brighton, there's no one policing the streets. There's no, nothing would stop a boy going up from a girl and pinching their bum or having a grab.
Has it gone backwards? Has it gone backwards since you, your daughter's
100%.
Age? Yeah, I think you're right.
100%. And my daughter's getting the bus home from school together, and she's armed with this sort of rape alarm that is also a very loud, bright torch.
Of course.
She has an Apple tag on her. But most importantly, what I have told her is, you know, the devil knows who to dance with. You do not walk down the street with your AirPods in. I don't care if it's 12 o'clock in broad daylight. You don't. You go with a purpose.
Isn't it? Because you're making her frightened now. You're inducting her into the life of hypervigilance. I'm not criticising you for doing so.
There is that.
But hypervigilance is there. How do men stop other men from doing this is a question we don't ask often enough. There were some quite effective campaigns, wasn't there, recently, where there'd be a group of boys, a group of young men, and one of them was either preparing to or beginning to engage in the kind of behaviour that you describe. And it takes one of the, you've got to be quite a gutsy mate, haven't you, to stand up in that context and say, what are you doing? What are you doing, you Wally? Wind your neck in, give your head a wobble. I mean, only men can stop other men from doing this. Sorry, I talked over you.
It takes a gutsy friend, and it also takes, you just hope that parents are nourishing their children in the right way at home.
Yes.
You know, it is from the start. It is like, from the very start, I always told my daughter, no is no. And that even means when I'm tickling her, if she says no when she was little, if she says no, I stopped. Because she has to understand that if I say no, someone is listening to me, and that means stop. And I was taught that example, by the way. And I wouldn't have thought that myself, but it is important. I'd like to go back to one thing, and I don't know if this is a... because I feel slightly like I may have given up, or maybe my age. But
yes.
Two callers ago, you were talking about the politician who said, "Oh, you know, whose breasts are these?"
Wasn't a politician. He wasn't a politician.
So
he was
sorry.
A sort of failed journalist until Cammy Badenoch put him in the House of Lords.
I mean, comments like that.
Yeah.
Whilst they're not acceptable. When I was listening to you having this conversation with the caller, I suppose I slightly giggled because there's so much bigger stuff that I worry about. And may I remind?
But if you shouted that out of a van window, as opposed to sticking it on Twitter, then it would be. So that's the question about example,
yes,
isn't it?
The difference? That's
there isn't a difference. There isn't a difference.
I do.
Well, except that if you shouted out of a van window, I don't think Cammy Badenoch would put you in the House of Lords.
Well, that's it, and you haven't shouted it out to the whole world. But, you know, last summer, let me leave you with this, because it was the summer of 2020, it's a bit of a giggle, but last summer, 2024, Paris Olympics, there was this poor French pole vaulter. Do you remember what happened and why he was eliminated from the Games? I won't say anything inappropriate.
Did it involve an appendage?
It did.
Yes.
And this poor guy has had the footage all over YouTube, TikTok, his name is everywhere. And, you know, and we watch that with our friends and laugh. And that's equally as unkind, isn't it?
No. It's incredibly embarrassing, and it's incredibly unkind. But he never felt threatened.
He didn't feel threatened. Okay. Yes. He probably got a lot of quite good...
it depends. I mean, yes, okay, you did say we would end with a giggle, but I think the threat, I think you actually helped me realise what the difference was between those two things with some of your earlier comments, and it shouldn't ever be. It's going to be very, very hard to address that sort of behaviour or that sort of response to something that the whole world is watching, but the idea that that there's any threat or fear involved there. It could be an utterly horrific experience, utterly crippling, depending on who you are and what your confidence levels are like and all of that, how thick your skin is. But no, I think that this is not a two-way road. A man can never feel what you feel when you are on the receiving end of the kind of behaviour that you described. 03456060973 is the number you need. It's 11:46.
Weekdays from 7 a.m.
You've been humiliated beyond all belief.
Straight to the point.
Just pull the plug. There's no conversation to be had here.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
It's got worse. What is the problem they've got over there?
Listen on Global Player or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store. LBC.
At This Vet, me as the owner, surgeon, rota manager and puppy wrangler. And now she and her team are cybersecurity experts too.
Mia, someone tried accessing our system. Phishing scam. I blocked it.
BT Security Awareness Training turns your team into your first line of defense. Quick to set up from just £1.25 per user per month. Cybersecurity is everyone's business. Thankfully, not just Mia's. Search BT Business Cybersecurity. T&Cs apply. Prices exclude VAT at 20%. 12-month minimum term applies.
With over 50 years' experience at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools, and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions, or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
Psst, have you heard?
About what?
About Boots Optician's ultimate eye test with OptiMap scan.
Why are you whispering?
I think it's for VIPs. It's an in-depth look into your eye that can detect health conditions that other eye scans might miss.
You know, the whole family's already had one done. You should too.
Okay, I'll book one now.
Why are you still whispering?
Don't know. Can't seem to stop.
Ask about OptiMap when you book an eye test at Boots Opticians and see what's possible. OptiMap available in selected stores. Additional charges apply.
Pump six in this meal deal, please.
Let's play Rate My BP Meal Deal.
Okay.
You chose an M&S chicken and bacon pasta, Magnum ice cream and a Wild Bean Cafe iced latte. That's a 10. A perfect warm weather combo.
Have I won a holiday?
No. BP Meal Deal. One deal, millions of combinations. All for £6. T's and C's apply, subject to availability at BP M&S stores only. For details, see bp.com/latest offers.
At TfL, we're making tube journeys faster in the future, with signalling improvements underway on the Circle, District, Hammersmith and City and Metropolitan lines. And there's also the Elizabeth line, already giving you fast journeys across central London. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Elizabeth line is fast compared to other TfL modes. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
I'm going to read this one without comment, all right? I'll read you a couple of messages from a couple of men first, because we haven't had any other male voices on the programme, and I think that's correct in the context of calls, but not in the context of contributions. This is nice, from Andy. Verity hit the nail on the head. We're trying to treat the symptoms and not the virus. Men who are undertaking this sort of behaviour are finding it too easy to go online and justify such behaviour. Articles with quick clickbait headlines and the rest of it encourage men and boys to think that it's okay to act or actually be misogynistic. It is, it's a very well-rewarded grift, isn't it, online? And this from Kyle, which just speaks to something that has been bouncing away in the back of my brain in a moment, which was links between the last hour and this hour. Honest Bob Jenrick writing articles for the Mail on Sunday about how he feels, how unsafe he feels on behalf of his young daughters because of all the immigrants. And you sort of think, mate, have you ever stuck your head out the window in modern life and experienced what all girls and all women are exposed to by all manner of men? Because to focus on one, I mean, it's a great let-off for all the fellas that are behaving like this all the time and don't fit into your current prejudices. And Kyle picks up on it quite brilliantly. I work in construction. The amount of men who would comment about a sexual assault by so-called illegals and then go up the scaffolding and 20 minutes later start ogling a girl who is quite clearly in school uniform is truly astounding. They don't seem capable of making any connection themselves. It just tallies with the little thought I was having. I'm just going to read this one without comment, okay? I'm not even going to play a game where I invite you to guess whether it's been sent in by a man or a woman. It's not a power thing, like your last caller said. I feel it's just men looking at attractive women. Women look at me when I'm driving, and I feel like it's a compliment, not anything else. So thank you for that. Jamie is in Glasgow. Jamie, what made you pick up the phone?
I was just listening to some of the comments from people, and I do youth work in Glasgow. I work in quite a multicultural area. There's a lot of young boys that we're doing work with, predominantly about 14 to 16 year olds. There has been some issues that come up. Sometimes some of the boys make comments, and I think your last call had said starts in the home, which I think the basics maybe do. But boys aren't going to have be confident enough to say some of the things that they'd say, where they think it's a safe space where they can maybe say some things to show off.
Yes.
You've also got this added culture of group chat, so you could have one boy's got 226 of his fellow students in a group chat, but it's just a constant try to show off and each other. I didn't think about this until your last caller had mentioned it, but when I was about, I think, 22, 23, I was in a car with about three friends, and the guy that was driving, he pulls up next to the girl that's stopped the traffic light. She's in the car to the left of us, so to the left of me, and he starts like beating his horn, and I'm like, "What are you doing?" And this girl, I glance to her, and she's just looking straight forward. She's got both hands firmly on the steering wheel, and I'm like, "What are you doing?" She's like, "Oh, look at her, look at," and I'm like, "What is going on in your head?" She's clearly aware that there's like four guys in a car. There's no one else in the street. It's about 9:30 on a Glasgow road. And I had to get him. I was almost ready to pull his handbrake, so he didn't drive off when she drove off. But when she drove off, I got my pull over. And I had to make it personal. I was like, "Listen, you've got a sister. I've got a sister. But it shouldn't even be like that." But
yeah.
What did you expect to happen? Did you think she was going to put down a window and go, "Oh yeah, how you doing?"
Here's my phone number.
Process in my head, and I do think there's that power dynamic that you were saying, and I do think part of my job as a youth worker, working with young boys in particular, is to challenge it, but to challenge the words and the behaviour, because I know deep down they're not like that, and I have had the other boys that will get in touch and be like, "Oh, Jamie, there's this boy at my school. He put his arm around this girl and she was uncomfortable, and then he started getting defensive." And I'm like, "Wait, that's good that you're coming to me with it."
Yeah.
Because obviously you feel like, right, I've seen something going on. The boy's taken the wrong way when you've challenged them. So then I can get involved and I can be an adult that's sort of...
Oh, we just need more of you. We need more Jamies.
Well, there the we problem go. Is problem solved. In these group chats, adults aren't there.
Where it escalates. That's where it gets normalised. And that's where, for some of these lads, it will seep out into real life, into real human interactions, because no one has challenged them to the point where they recognise it was wrong. Can I take you back to that car, mate? And just, I mean, were you genuinely gobsmacked by what your friend was doing?
I feel that the same anger right now thinking about it. I didn't even think of the story until the last call I'd said. I went, "Do you know what? I have been in that situation."
Yeah.
I've been there, and there was another time I was in Italy with two friends, and my friend had asked a girl for a lighter, and then later he's like, "Oh, I'm going to go to the bar and order her a drink," and send it over. And I was like, I've got a sister that's been in that situation where a guy sent her over a drink, her and her friend sort of were a bit embarrassed but accepted it.
Sure.
Two of her friends left, and she's sitting waiting for a taxi, and the guy and his mates come over, and they were like, and she said she was so intimidated by it that she was terrified. And I was like, so that guy thought, "I'm sending over a drink. What else are you going to do?"
Yeah.
9 times out of 10, you're going to be like, "Okay, I'll just take it," even if you are a bit embarrassed by it. But then he thought that he had the right to sort of go over and be like, "Oh, what are you up to? Where are you going?"
Yeah, he's bought access. She has no say in the process at all. I hadn't even thought of that as being problematic as well. And there will be in circumstances when it isn't, but, you know, just nixing it always is a relatively small price to pay to avoid the discomfort that your sister endured that day. I wonder how many men are like you. I don't think, apart from when I was 16 and didn't even recognise how wrong it was, because it was a very long time ago, and I got no excuses. I just didn't. Or boys' school, whatever it would be. I wonder how many men have found themselves in the same situation as you. Because it's the being gobsmacked that I'm most intrigued by. The idea that, because the way you told the story was brilliant. Because I started laughing. And that is, I think that's a Margaret Atwood line, that Helen has reminded me of. And it takes us back to the pole vaulter that Louise in Brighton was talking about. The big difference here is that men are afraid women will laugh at them. Women are afraid men will kill them.
Yeah.
And you were laughing at your mate. You were a man, or not laughing at him, but you were just like, "What are you doing? What are you actually doing?" And it's that point. It's never going to be a How I Met Your Mother story. Is it, as Kathy points out, you're never going to be sitting on your dad's lap saying, "How did you meet Mum?" And say, "Well, I pulled up alongside her at the traffic jam, at the traffic lights, and commented on the size of her breasts, and we've been together ever since, son." It's a true romance. Thank you, Jamie. More of you, please. Leslie's in Chepstow. Leslie, what would you like to say?
So I was just thinking, going back to sort of the daughter situation, my daughter's 17, going on 18.
she's quite probably in quite an attractive little thing,
sure.
Quite small frame, big busted really, which is its own problems. But she has lots of conversations about what she's wearing, going out, and all those kind of things, which is really horrible because she's just like, why should I have to worry about it? You know, my friends with the same top don't have to worry about it, and it's a really awkward thing because I really want to be a strong woman for her, but equally I want to kind of just make her think. She's walked to work a few times recently, just a village really, just walking to a to where we live, and not just down the road, and she's rang me saying, oh, some guys have shouted at me in a car. That's happened twice in the last 2 weeks. She's been on holiday with her dad recently as well, and two guys separately have come up to her and I've said, you need to make sure you walk in with your dad. But the other thing is she's wanting to get into an age where she's wanting to kind of go out into the pubs and what have you.
Yes.
And I'm having that conversation with her about, actually, you know, things are going to happen. And I don't actually know what to tell her. If somebody touches a bum, you know, you kind of want to tell them to do one. But actually, you've got to be really careful in a night out environment. So I feel kind of weak, really, because a lot of it's quite passive. I'm telling her, you know, play it down, because... And it's horrible. I really wanted to shout and scream, but it's not the way to kind of get out of the situation and not cause any drama, really.
And the fact, I mean, things better or worse than when you were her age, do you think?
Do you know what? I actually think that they are no different.
Right.
I think it's just, I mean, I remember being her age and, you know, someone in the office rubbing my shoulders and me thinking it was normal, you know, and I had situations walking down the road similarly. My mum did in, what would it be, 84, when she was expecting me. She was walking over the brow of a hill.
Yeah.
She got beeped at, and as the truck drove past, they saw she was pregnant and looked mortified, which she thought was brilliant.
Well, it is
everyone's got stories like that. I mean, that was what, 40 years ago. So I don't think anything's changed. I just think that actually we're probably in a better position because the friends can talk about it now. They can share their experiences. I think it's just more open rather than accepted.
From that perspective, yeah, it is. And yet from the other perspective, from the point of view of boys, the messaging that they're getting, not just online, but also from public figures, is that this kind of behaviour is okay. So it's swings and roundabouts, isn't it? But you're right, as a mum, not knowing what to say, because you want to say, oh, don't wear that, because you will attract unwanted attention. And yet the other voice in your head is saying, you can wear whatever the hell you want. It's the 21st century, and it's a free country. But I don't know what the answer to that is, any more than you do, Leslie. What do you think? She's going to ignore you, whatever you say, anyway.
Do you know what? She's really open with me, which is really great.
She's going to wear what she wants. She's going to wear what she wants to wear.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, she is to some degree, but she has been a bit more thoughtful about it since she's had the comments. So beforehand, when she was maybe a little bit younger, she didn't quite get it. But she, I mean, it's quite interesting you talking about the boy. So her. She's 17, her little brother's 13.
Right.
And he's quite privy to, there's the three of us a lot of the time, so he's privy to some of the conversations, and it's actually really useful trying to bring him up in a way that he recognises the impact that it has on you know, his sister and myself on the odd occasion that it happens. It's good just to talk it through with him. That's the best way, I think.
No, and you know, youth workers like Jamie, mums like you, all of these... Bricks in the wall are what the solution looks like, but you just can never have enough of it, can you? Extraordinary conversations and subjects that we will return to, but a quick, as I've mentioned already, a credit to Emma Call, my colleague in Surrey, for going out on operation with these plainclothes police officers, simply jogging through areas where harassment hotspots have been identified, and it sounds, Leslie, as if the route your daughter takes to work might be one of those hotspots as well, given how much she has experienced in such a relatively short period of time. I'd like to think, as we near the end of this hour and prepare for the next one together, that everybody now can see what a great idea this was by Surrey Police.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, Keir Starmer is co-chairing a meeting of Ukraine's European allies to discuss Friday's US-Russia summit. They will hold virtual talks with President Zelensky before they're joined by Donald Trump and Vice President J.D. Vance. Mr. Vance is currently visiting the UK. LBC's Henry Riley reports.
The US Vice President will join European leaders on a virtual call with President Trump this afternoon, ahead of Friday's summit with Vladimir Putin in Alaska. They'll discuss European concerns about what could be agreed between Donald Trump and President Putin after President Zelensky ruled out handing over the Donbass in any peace deal. J.D. Vance will then head to this Gloucestershire base and receive a briefing on capabilities and meet American troops from the 501st Combat Support Wing and the 99th Expeditionary Reconnaissance Squadron. Henry Riley, LBC, RAF Fairford.
Three teenagers have been charged with murdering a man on the Isle of Sheppey in Kent. The 16-year-old girl and two boys, aged 14 and 15, are accused of killing Alexander Cashford in Laysdown-on-Sea on Sunday. A 12-year-old girl, also arrested in connection with the incident, remains in custody. The Home Secretary, Yvette Cooper, has welcomed a push for police to share suspects' ethnicity and nationality. The updated guidelines follow a series of controversial cases in which authorities were accused of concealing the information. Ms. Cooper says it is a step forward for transparency.
We have also asked the Law Commission particularly to look at what information can be released to make sure that we're not also affecting criminal trials that are underway. That's where a lot of the restrictions and constraints have been. So we've asked the Law Commission to report very quickly this autumn on what more can be done to avoid prejudice in criminal trials.
The Treasury is reportedly looking at changes to inheritance tax ahead of the budget this autumn. It's understood changes could include a lifetime cap on gifts that can be passed on without incurring the tax. Former Labour adviser James Medway has warned that could backfire.
Talking a small amount of money from a relatively small number of people, the danger for the government, of course, is that, as you've seen from the headlines today, is that this turns into a very big political fuss quite rapidly. And we saw that, of course, with the farmers' inheritance tax changes over the last year or so.
The Treasury hasn't directly addressed the reports, but says it wants to keep taxes for working people as low as possible. Wales' First Minister has announced the death of Senedd member Hevin David at the age of 47. He'd been the Labour MS for Caerphilly since 2016. A statement from Eluned Morgan says she's extremely saddened by the sudden news. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading at 91.53. That is up 5. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 15. LBC weather staying warm and sunny this afternoon with a few thunderstorms possible. A high of 33 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Outlet shopping at the O2. Get up to 70% off RRP on over 60 designer brands, including Nike, Adidas, Levi's, Sunglass Hut, the cosmetics company store, Le Creuset, and more. Plus, why not make a day of it with over 30 bars and restaurants, a cinema, bowling, interactive football, and more. There's so much to do at the O2 this summer. Find us at North Greenwich, just 15 minutes from central London. Search Outlet Shopping at the O2 to start planning your visit.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 5 minutes after 12. We're going to do something a little bit different now, and it might be a nice opportunity for you to get involved in the programme more directly if you've often thought, I'd like to ring in, but I'm a bit nervous, or I'd like to ring in, but I'm not sure I've got anything to say. It's inspired partly by that item in the news bulletin you just heard regarding inheritance tax, but I want to categorically state that it is not about inheritance tax and inheritance tax alone. I've been struck for some time by a sort of anomaly at the heart of public discourse. And although I wrote a book called How They Broke Britain, it was a book about fixable problems that had been created by decades of corruption in various areas of public life, but particularly in the 14 years since 2010. If you think of the four horsemen of the apocalypse as austerity, Brexit, Boris Johnson and Liz Truss, then an awful lot of the problems that right-wing media is currently rubbing its hands with glee about and reporting as if it has only just happened have are much easier to make sense of. Quite bizarre, really, that all of these problems can go for 14 years without being mentioned at all, and then suddenly it's all Keir Starmer's fault for not fixing them in a heartbeat, having become Prime Minister in circumstances that you wouldn't really wish on your worst enemy, given the state of the nation. So I wrote a book on how they broke Britain, but I love this place. And I think there is way more good here than bad, but it would be very foolish. I think that's the definition, perhaps, of Pollyanna-ish, to pretend that there aren't some serious problems. And the problems are with infrastructure. The problems are with public services. And that means that the government is going to have to find some money. It just is. I'm going to exclude cuts from this conversation, not because they are not necessarily part of the conversation, but for two reasons. The first is, it's not helpful. The numbers do not support the idea that if we could just take money away from here, then we'd be able to take money away. So cuts to public spending, right, are not anywhere near going to provide a big enough solution to the holes in our public finances. And instead, if you're not going to do cuts, then you have to be doing raises. So Rachel Reeves and the rest of the government will have to find money from the population, whether it's individuals, institutions, or businesses. They are going to have to do this. It is such a weird place to find yourself in, isn't it, as a country, that the Chancellor, for good or for ill, pledged not to raise taxes, but she is going to have to. Whether or not you believe that they were completely taken by surprise by the size of the black hole in public finances that they inherited from, it's very hard to remember how many Tory prime ministers there were. Five since 2010, I think. I could have forgotten one. Hang on. David Cameron, Theresa May, Boris Johnson, Liz Truss, Rishi Sunak. Is that it? Is it just five of them? David Cameron, Theresa May, Boris Johnson, Liz Truss, Rishi Sunak. I feel like I've missed one. Prime ministers, so can't have the current lead. No, that's it. So anyway, five in 14 years. And I don't know whether you believe them when they say that they've been completely surprised by the size of the black hole. I think some SNP politicians were pointing it out rather earlier. But either way, it's the existence of the black hole that matters, not the knowledge of whether it was coming. And I can't get past this, you know. I don't even know what the correct word is. It's beyond cognitive dissonance. If they try to raise taxes anywhere, they get screamed at. And if you acknowledge the consequences of underfunded public services, in particular, whether it's the NHS, Daily Mail today's got an article, some columnist went to the A&E and had a tricky time of it, and that's all Keir Starmer's fault, apparently. It's as if 14 years of Tory rule never happened. It's as if austerity, Brexit, Liz Truss and Boris Johnson never happened. So if they say they're going to raise money to fix these problems, they get a kicking. Whatever it is they come up with, whether it's inheritance tax for farmers, whether it is VAT on school fees, just crack out all the world's tiniest violins, whether it is changes to inheritance tax, these are always deeply, deeply unpopular positions. Not just with the right-wing media, I don't think, but also with much of the public. And that bit we'll examine. I don't know if that's true. And the second bit of the story is that the discourse now is about how awful everything is. It's actually insane. Whether you're talking about criminality, without mentioning the epic cuts to the criminal justice system and the police services that have been undertaken over the last decade and a half, you complain about that without taking responsibility for cheerleading Boris Johnson, David Cameron, Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak for 14 years. Now you can suddenly turn around and blame it all on Keir Starmer. Oh, and if he's busy, blame it on Sadiq Khan. It's actually incredible, right? That the voices on the right are simultaneously bemoaning the state of the nation. It's almost like they had a little clock running, isn't it? It's almost like they had a little... How long do we give Keir Starmer before we blame all the problems he's inherited on him? Would a year be... Can we do it in a week? No, you're going to have to sit tight for more than... What about a fortnight? No. 6 months? Probably still a bit too previous. You know when someone does a joke after something bad has happened? Is it too soon? Is it too soon? Can we start blaming Keir Starmer for everything we did yet? So you've got newspapers that were cheerleaders not just for Boris Johnson and Brexit, but for Liz Truss's budget. Most obviously, The Telegraph. A bloke called Alistair Heath writing in The Telegraph about how Liz Truss was like the greatest thing since sliced bread when it came to economics. The Daily Mail front page. Finally, a true Tory budget. Nigel Farage describing it as the best budget in living memory. All of these people now bemoaning the state of the nation despite having played incredibly key roles in bringing the nation to its knees, both socially and fiscally. The two go hand in hand. You cut public spending, it's the poor who get hit hardest. You know what Alexis Sale said about it? Austerity was the political idea built upon the notion that the global financial crisis in 2008 was caused by there being too many libraries in Wolverhampton. I'm going to talk about this more as the months pass, because it's getting madder and madder and madder. I'm sick of listening to and reading people who had nothing negative at all to say about austerity, Brexit, Boris Johnson or Liz Truss, who are now convinced that the reason why we are fraying at the edges in many areas of public life is all down to the Labour government. It is beyond insulting to listeners and readers to pretend that the people whose toes you tickled for a decade and a half bear less responsibility for the state of the nation now than the fellow who's only been in charge for a year and a bit. It's incredible, right? We're going to cancel net zero and stop the boats and everything will be fine again. It's just incredible. So stupid. But I guess if they learn anything from Brexit, it's that there is no limit to the stupidity that many of the British public will swallow. You can tell them anything. They will swallow. You dress it up in the right clothes, the right nativistic language. You dress it up with the right little pandering to prejudices. They will buy anything. It's all Labour's fault. Bloody lefties. 14 years of Tory rule under which every single thing got worse. Yeah, that's all Keir Starmer's fault as well. I find it incredible, even as someone who does this for a living. And it's created this environment in which we are simultaneously being screamed at about how awful everything is, this narrative of decline, this narrative of diminishment, and being screamed at about how wrong and how awful it would be to raise taxes. Bing, bing, bing. It's incredible, right? We can't possibly raise taxes. It would be the end of civilization as we know it. We can't possibly carry on like this. It would be the end of civil. Well, you've got to do one or the other. You can't fix one without doing the other. Would you? Can you? I don't think you can. So this is a phone-in. I always hear the theme tune to the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air pinging away in the background when I start a sentence like that. This is a phone-in all about how the tax got no. It's a phone-in about where the money should come from. And some of the answers to this are going to be very personal. And some of them are going to be more objective. They're going to be more big picture. There is a quote from a source looking at the government's current plans on inheritance tax in The Guardian today that really, really sings. They say, with so much wealth stored in assets like houses that have shot up in value, we have to find ways to better tap into the inheritances of those who can afford to contribute more. It's hard to make sure these taxes don't end up with loopholes that undermine their purpose, but we are trying to work out what revenue might be raised and how to ensure it's a fair approach. So there's one idea. The difference, if you like, between other people paying taxes and you paying taxes. The school fees thing was brilliant. The thing I learned from the school fees conversation was that people who send their children to private school, as I did, as I do, as my parents did, many of them think they're the only people on the planet who work hard. Maybe I'm very lucky because I clock off at 1 o'clock. I can't possibly really claim that I work harder than you do, unless you're a builder. That's a joke that you need to have been listening to the last hour of the programme to understand, but don't worry, because you can rewind live radio on the LBC app. So maybe it's just because I clock off at 1 o'clock that I can't really buy into the idea that the only people in this country who really work hard are the people, the 7% of people who can afford to send their children to private school. But I do understand the difference between people who, between taxes that you will pay and taxes that other people will pay. And that is part of my problem. I don't have an ideological problem with wealth taxes, but I have a political problem with the ease. It's a little bit simplistic. It's borderline populism, isn't it, to say, I want other people to pay taxes. So where is it going to come from? Hand on heart. I don't know how much knowledge you've got. You may have more than I do. Income tax, if you're comfortable with that, you've got to be in the category of people who would pay more, I think. Otherwise, it just becomes populist. 03456060973 is the number you need. Rachel Reeves, however she dices it and whatever she says, is going to have to raise taxes. I don't know how anyone can argue against that, but if you think you can, 03456, that she shouldn't. Remember, you're not allowed to blame it all on immigrants and unemployed people. Oh, if only we could get rid of all the immigrants and put all the unemployed people to work, then we'd be absolutely fine. People have been saying that in this country since Rupert Murdoch bought the News of the World 50 years ago. 03456060973 is a number you call if you've got a vaguely intelligent idea about where she should get the money from. And here's the other question. What would be the fairest? Mirror, mirror on the wall, what is the fairest tax of them all? So, working on the premise, and you can absolutely challenge this, but I'd be amazed if you think that you can, that she has to raise more money, okay? Where would be the fairest place to take it from? Bit different for us, this phone-in, because it's entirely theoretical and speculative, but it will hopefully be built upon knowledge and understanding. 03456060973 is the number that you need. The fairest way, with a slight caveat, that Peter sent me a message saying, in a recent survey, 100% of respondents said that other people should pay more tax. That's very funny. But I just be conscious of that. Be conscious of being a little bit too glib, a little bit too simplistic. But where would be the fairest place for Rachel Reeves to raise money that the whole country so desperately needs? It's 12:17.
This is LBC.
Who's a good human? Alex is. Because today's dog walk with Lulu the Corgi has turned into an off-grid adventure. But wherever Lulu's nose takes her, Alex will always gladly follow. That's why he also chooses Butternut Box for Lulu's meals. Freshly prepared and served straight from the fridge, helping Lulu thrive from nose to tail. Meaning one less trek for Alex, as we deliver each box straight to your door. Ready to join thousands of good humans? Go to butternutbox.com to fetch 25% off your first box with code GOODHUMAN.
You sound happy.
I've just spotted tuna in the fridge, and it's got my name all over it.
Well, be careful. It's a long way up.
Relax. We're insured, aren't we?
Nope. That's not what I've heard.
Because you never know what little pickles will get themselves into. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Seriously, we're not insured.
Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate.
Got any tips for the football?
Your best bet is to head over to BetVictor. They're giving new customers a terrific welcome offer. If you bet a minimum of £10, they'll give you £30 in free bets.
Oh, that's a steal of a deal.
It's a good darn deal that'll make you squeal for real. Neil?
My name's not Neil.
I know, but it rhymes.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet on the football at BetVictor. 18 plus, opt in and bet on any football marketing at odds of evens or greater. No cash out, 7-day expiry. Terms and conditions apply at gambleaware.org.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Think about it a lot more than is healthy, but I do this for a living, so I think it's forgivable. The breach between reality and rhetoric never been wider, has it? And I'm obsessed with it, the idea that it all goes back to Brexit, because the lies that were told by previously respectable people, the lies that appeared on front pages of newspapers that had previously had a strained but never completely corrupted relationship with the truth and reality. I mentioned David Aranovich's rather splendid Substack earlier. He has a nice piece in the latest edition that looks at Daniel Hannan, great friend of this programme, although not necessarily for reasons that he'd be proud of, the wrongest man in history. By some extraordinary distance, the wrongest man in the world. And yet they're still there, these people responsible for turning the country into a crackpot case, are still claiming to have special insight. The people who brought you Brexit, austerity, Boris Johnson, Liz Truss, and didn't just usher them in, but praised them to the rooftops, now attacking everything that the Labour government does and has done, and blaming them for a failure to fix all of the problems that they created. But tax will have to go up. Where is the fairest place to find it? Nick's in Dagenham. Nick, what would you like to say?
Oh, yes. Hi. Yes, I'd like to say that I think we should tax the increase in value of your home on principal private residence, i.e. on the place where you live.
But only when you sell it?
only when you sell it, and it should be, and the money should perhaps be invested in our housing, which is a complete state.
So I bought a house for £50,000 in 1986. I'm selling it tomorrow for £1.5 million on the 1.45 million pounds. A percentage of that should go straight to the Treasury.
Absolutely. I think every other form of increasing value, if you put money in building societies, shares, everything is taxed if you make money. This is the one thing we don't tax.
How long have you had this idea?
Oh, God, a long time.
I disagree
with inheritance tax because you pay tax all your life, you die and you pay tax again. That's just...
But it's the same. Is it not the same as inheritance tax in a way?
Well... Yes and no. I think in some senses it is similar, but the point is that we don't do it at the moment because it's an unpopular piece of legislation.
And also, you'd have to pay it even if you weren't dead.
Oh, absolutely.
So every time you sell a house, a percentage of the profit that you've made goes to the Treasury.
Yeah, absolutely. And you could introduce it in a graduated format so that perhaps older people like myself, you could introduce it, 5% in the first year up to 20% over 5 years. And so it would encourage the older people to move out the bigger homes, which they no longer need anymore.
I wasn't expecting this to happen. So we've got two phone-ins now. We've got the broad question of what is the fairest way to raise tax, and then we've got invitations to either endorse or tear apart Nick's suggestion, which has never really occurred to me before, which is a terrible failing on my part. I mean, I can spot some flaws and loopholes, but there will be flaws and loopholes in almost any suggestion, won't there? The idea that, I mean, you're borrowing money to buy your house in the first place, so we'd have to finesse the numbers slightly. Some people would put it in trust, of course. You're never going to get any profit on a stately home, are you? The biggest, most valuable properties in the country are going to be handed down generation to generation. So inheritance tax, if you're also going to get rid of inheritance tax, you're giving them a double win, I think, those people. But yeah, there are very few
and far between, aren't they? The majority of people don't live in stately homes. The majority of people, especially of my generation, I'm in my late 60s, I bought a home 25 years ago, and I've sat in it, and it's increased in value by, I think, £800,000 or £900,000.
How can anyone object to you? What percentage would we put on it, mate?
Well, I think you do it graduated to encourage the market to move. So all these older people living in houses, rattling around big houses, are encouraged to make the choice and move earlier rather than later.
It's a lovely start. You've justified the entire topic, Nick. So congratulations and thank you. And as I say, there are wrinkles here. Dave points out this bloke is actually describing inheritance tax. Not quite, because it would be on every transaction, although it's not quite as far away from an inheritance tax as perhaps Nick thought it was. And Justina says, a primary residence tax isn't fair if you've spent £500,000 on improving it. How is that fair? Well, you can keep a record of how much you've spent on improving it, couldn't you? We've done up a house, and that does put us in a very different category from Nick. You've already spent the money on doing it up, and then you'd be taxed on purchase plus, what's it called? Not renovation, but renovation and also upkeep. Purchase plus renovation. What is left after purchase plus renovation, and you'd have to keep a record of renovation costs, and what is left is profit, and it's only the profit that would be taxed. So to mollify Justina and possibly me, it would be purchase plus renovation. The problem is, of course, if you're going to bring it in tomorrow when you renovated your house 10 years ago, you're not going to have... Are these deal breakers, or are they mere wrinkles in an otherwise splendid proposal? James is in Rochester. James, what would you like to say?
Hello, first time caller. This is a bit weird for me. I've been listening for quite a while.
Surprised. Can I just make it clear that we didn't ring you? You did, in fact, ring us.
No, I'm a bit surprised. I never thought I'd actually get through, to be brutally honest.
Love it. What do you want to say? Thank you, James.
So, like most normal people, I spend quite a lot of time on YouTube. And one of the people that's popped out to me is Gary's Economics. And he's talking about a wealth tax quite aggressively and trying to get it pushed through to the front of consciousness. And that's one of the points that has jumped out to me quite aggressively recently, and his logic on it is sound, in my opinion.
Well, some of his examples are extraordinary. Most recently, I think he's done this on normal telly rather than on his own YouTube channel. He points out the Duke of Westminster can inherit £10 billion and pay nothing. Whereas ordinary working people are being taxed at between 30 and 50% on their income. And that just feels hideously wrong.
Yeah, so I've climbed up from quite a working class background. I started in a manufacturing facility just making bits of plastic and metal. And I've managed to climb up the ladder, as it were, a reasonable amount. And yeah. I'm now in a position where I feel a bit more comfortable, but just because of the tax levels and overtime since I've been working when I started work, it's just, I don't feel like I have actually gained anything, even though I've fought my way up to get more. And yeah, it just, in my opinion, it feels like we're in a bit of a broken system. And it's the first thing that's reached out to me and actually made it feel like I'm represented. So he's very much come out with the
I've got some good news and some bad news. The bad news is obvious. There are some people who don't think he's got the answers to many of our problems. The good news is I sat down with him for an hour last year on Full Disclosure, so you can download that podcast and have a lovely listen later, because I'm a big fan. I think he's a stand-up guy, and I think he's incredibly bright, and some of the stuff that he says seems to me to be almost impossible to argue with. But you are putting yourself in the category of 100% of people who think that other people should pay more taxes.
Yeah, I think I am. Yeah, you're probably right.
Which is how it goes, isn't it? I mean, it's always there. But I do find the idea that the accumulation of wealth in an increasingly small pocket of our society is something that you need to address and seek to reverse. Generations of people who are no longer presuming property ownership, and yet the properties that they would once have owned are owned by somebody. It's just that ever shrinking. The number of people in that category is shrinking, and the amount of assets that they hold is growing exponentially. It is actually bonkers, but of course, in a country where newspapers are owned by viscounts or by plutocrats and foreign billionaires, you're unlikely to see much of Gary's explanations and rhetorics on the media in front of you, which is why James references YouTube, of course, which has much, much higher subscription rates than much of the media that we still follow when it comes to deciding what to talk about. And they've come for him a bit as well, I noticed, about 6 months ago. A male, I think, part of people outside his parents' house trying to just knock the gloss off him. You know you're doing something right when you've got the right-wing media digging around desperately to find out negative things about you, because they are terrified of what James describes. Fairness. Boris is in Worthing, not that one. What's on your mind, Boris?
Oh, James, hi. You really are dragging in people who've listened to you for a long time and...
Well, then I must do this more often. I must do this more often, mustn't I? Go on, what prompted you to pick up the phone?
I've worked in taxis for 45 years.
Taxis or taxis?
Well, both. Mainly taxis.
Go on, then.
There's a whole raft of things that the government could do. I'm fairly sure that when a government gets into power, there's obviously a sort of representation of civil servants, etc., telling them they shouldn't do this, that and the other.
Yes, that's for sure.
Because it's obvious. Yeah, it's obvious what they could be doing to me. Now, when the government, HMRC, published the trust statement recently, which you hear very little about, and it's the opposite side to all the expenditure. It's where the money comes from.
Yeah.
Now, I could go through, there's numerous things in there, but one big thing that is in there that really should be jumping out at the Chancellor, and I know it's picking on businesses, unfortunately, but the country gets VAT, the amount receivable in the year is £290 billion. Okay, that's enough for two NHSs.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, businesses are exempt from VAT, so they can claim all their VAT back. And they got back £110 billion last year. That is more than all the business in this country has paid in corporation tax of £90 billion.
What's the historic rationale? What's the historic rationale for that?
Do I remember? VAT came in the 70s. I was probably about 8.
Yeah. But
I think it was initially, like a lot of these things, it was, oh, you've got to collect a load of VAT from us, all you businesses, for us, rather. They're going to charge for their services and their products. So as a sweetener, they probably said, well, all right, you can knock off the VAT you've got to pay before you pay it over. And that's continued to the point where businesses are experts at this. They get...
Of course.
Believe me.
No, I know. I think Gordon Brown or somebody was suggesting recently we could stick VAT on gambling, which is not... I mean, it's adjacent to what you're suggesting, but making all businesses essentially hand over that VAT permanently rather than being able to claim it all back if it's a transaction that's been undertaken by a business as opposed to an individual. As with Nick, Boris, I'm putting it on the board and I'm inviting other people to take pot shots at it because I don't have the knowledge or the understanding. Maybe that it's a foolproof plan, in which case the question of why it hasn't been done before becomes pertinent, but I don't have the knowledge or the understanding to start biting chunks out of that. Maybe you do. If you think you're the man or woman for the job, the number you need remains the same. Thank you, Boris. A beautiful debut. Dominic Ellis is here now with your headlines.
President Zelensky has arrived in Berlin ahead of face-to-face talks with EU leaders and virtual talks with US President Trump. Mr. Zelensky says Ukraine and its allies must work together to pressure Russia into ending its invasion. Three teenagers have been charged with murdering a man on the Isle of Sheppey in Kent, the 16-year-old girl, and two boys aged 14 and 15 are accused of killing Alexander Cashford in Laysdown on Sea on Sunday. And the Home Secretary, Yvette Cooper, has welcomed plans for police to share some suspects' ethnicity and nationality with the public. The updated guidelines follow a series of controversial cases in which authorities were accused of concealing the information. LBC weather, another warm and sunny afternoon. Some thunderstorms developing later. Highs of 33 degrees.
This is LBC.
You could be a lotto millionaire like Terry. Get your ticket for tonight's draw. The National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Get the news your way and combine breaking news with expert opinion to see the full picture.
With award-winning journalism on air and in your hand, the LBC app puts you in control.
The biggest stories of the day delivered how you want it
and when you want it.
Download the LBC app now.
News your way.
Now in your hands.
The new single drops. The world tour begins. As artists create the music we love, you could be right there in the mix. Calling all young creatives. If you want a career in music, then listen up. Global Academy have a new 6-4 music production course. State-of-the-art studios, practical experience, hands-on learning with music professionals. Awesome. Apply now at globalacademy.com.
At This Vet, Mia's the owner, surgeon, rotor manager, and puppy wrangler. And now she and her team are cybersecurity experts too.
Mia, someone tried accessing our system. Phishing scam. I blocked it.
BT Security Awareness Training turns your team into your first line of defense. Quick to set up from just £1.25 per user per month. Cybersecurity is everyone's business. Thankfully, not just Mia's. Search BT Business Cybersecurity. T&Cs apply. Prices exclude VAT at 20%. 12-month minimum term applies.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 12:35. More pot shots being taken at Boris than Nick, which sort of has political echoes, doesn't it, to a different era, but neither of them are politicians. Nick was suggesting a tax upon property profits. So, you know, it would be complicated to introduce, but not impossible. And the amount of profit you made on your primary residence would determine how much tax you pay. A sliding scale, maybe? I don't know. But Boris suggesting that we start preventing businesses from being able to reclaim their VAT. That has come in for rather more criticism. I'll just read this from Tim. Imagine they charge VAT to a business. That is a cost. That 20% would go on to the cost of whatever widgets that business is making. Then you're charging the customer VAT again. That's why businesses get the difference back between what it's paid and what it's charged. I actually understand that, and I think that it is a valid criticism. And the problem with value-added taxes is that they penalise the poor a lot more than they do the wealthy, because depending on how much money you've got, a flat rate of taxation every time you buy something is going to take a bigger chunk out of your overall income in percentage terms if your overall income is smaller. Ben's in Leon C. Ben, what would you like to say?
Hey, James, and thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
I agree with a lot of the points raised. I just want to raise a fresh one, which is the amount of state subsidies going to employees who are in work, i.e. universal credits being paid to 34% of the working population.
Yeah.
And those companies are making...
Is it 34% of the working population, or 34% of people on universal credit are in work?
I beg your pardon, 34% of the individuals. Sorry, yes.
No, that's all right. No, just checking.
No, that's fine. And of course, those profits are being paid out to shareholders, who, as we know, pay very little tax on their unearned assets. So I think any companies that we're effectively subsidising to employ people and boost their profits, that's an area for grab. And this race to be at the bottom of corporation tax has got to stop.
I mean, again, I'm really enjoying this hour, because, again, you're sort of saying things I half knew, but hadn't thought about deeply enough. I have got on my high horse in the past about the notion of a supermarket, for example, which has got many staff on low wages, low enough to qualify for universal credit, posting £2 billion worth of profits. Sometimes, I don't know about you, but sometimes I look at something that feels so obviously unjust that I think I must be missing something, because they'd never get away with something so obviously unjust if it was as simple as it appears to be to us. But actually, sometimes it really is just massively unjust, isn't it?
Yeah, I fail to see the logic for it. Now, clearly there are some industries, the steel industry, where they get massive subsidies. There's an argument about national defence and the greater good and all that. But still, that's not privately owned companies. I'd also like to get one more if I can, and that's the graduation tax.
Fill your boots, mate.
We had.
Go on.
Okay, so this is you know 40% high, 45% high tax rates. I think we need to go back to a system where above a certain amount of income, then you pay a higher rate of tax for the thresholds above that. So, I mean, not perhaps as high as 98% that used to happen once upon a time, but certainly a 50% or a 55% tax rate above £200,000.
Under Harold Wilson. Well, I mean, this is where do you now put yourself in the realms of the 100% of people who think other people should pay more taxes, or would you be hit by this?
I would, depends on the level it came in at, but of course. It was, I'm in that sort of false band where you pay 65% because of the reduction of the threshold. So I wouldn't be directly impacted by it, but I think you need to set the level, as I say.
I just don't know. I mean, this is where I worry that I come from a position of self-interest. There comes a point where you get offered work and you work out how much you'd get after, and this is obviously the freelance life, you work out how much you'd get after you've paid tax on it, and you wonder whether it's worth doing. You have to guard against that. That's a very good way of looking at it, actually. I suppose. I like both of those. So was it under Harold Wilson, I think, when things went up to 98%? It's when the Beatles started writing about the tax man.
I don't remember which prime minister it was. I'm far too young. You and me both.
I wasn't even born, but I do remember the tax thresholds being incredibly, I mean, punitively high, and on the grounds that the nation needed to do it. It's incredible how the rhetoric has been successfully subverted by 50 years of media. The idea now of having tax levels that high, it may not be economically wise to do it, but you would never, ever, 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 ever get close to those sort of levels now, because the Murdoch and the Mail and the Telegraph and the rest of them would have your guts for garters. Thank you, Ben. 12:40 is the time. 03456060973 is the number. So let's just say, take Ben's point, Will's running with it, 60p, 60% for top rate tax. Just a question of where you'd put the threshold on the top rate tax. But if you're over that threshold, this is the maddest thing about economics. It's why I prefer wealth taxes to income taxes. Well, it may be because I've got a good income and I haven't got much wealth. But the maddest thing about it is the idea that you're going to be paying more on the money that you are earning than you are on the money that you are receiving simply for being wealthy. This is where I turn into Gary Stevenson a bit, just a much less informed and intelligent version. How can it be? And it's why I like Nick's idea about a property thing, which would hit me quite hard. Eventually, the taxes that we favour are going to be taxes that we pay. You're never going to come up with an answer from which you're entirely protected. But I like Ben's notion of universal credit. If a company is having its wage bill subsidised by the Treasury and divvying up huge profits to its shareholders, it's very hard to see how that is right or fair or even justified, isn't it? So let's say that O'Brien Supermarkets makes £1.8 billion a year, but let's say 34%, to use the national average, of my workforce. No, let's say 20% of my workforce is on universal credit. Surely all of the money that's gone to my workforce via universal credit should be taken out of my profits at the end of the year and given back to the Treasury. I don't know. That's why we don't do these phone-ins very often. Because sometimes it all sounds too good to be true, and sometimes you can't believe how little I know about this stuff. Keith's in Jedbro in Scotland. Keith, what would you like to say?
Good afternoon, James.
Hello, Keith.
I would just like to say, James, is that it's not just because I'm a frugal Scotsman, but there's no, there's
frugal.
Absolutely, yes. There's nobody likes being ripped off, James. And no. I think kind of, you know, there's only one end of a dirty stick that you pick up, and that's the clean end.
Yes.
And it's, you know, the way it is that if you feel that you're getting something for your money, then you're willing to pay for it.
Yeah.
So it's, I lived in Sweden for 15 years,
yeah,
and everybody says super expensive across there, blah, 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 blah. But then I tell them that if I was, for example, here, I'm still waiting on an MRI scan since October last year, and I went across to Sweden, I could go down there, I would be given that MRI scan within 2 hours, and I would actually be on the operating table literally the next again day if need be. And I don't pay any more tax than what somebody that was earning double the money that I was in, yeah, Sweden, you know. Everybody gets the same. And it's that thing, though, James, is that the price and the taxes disappears when you are getting something for your money.
But it's chicken and egg.
I know it is. I know it is. It's, but the chicken and egg, you know.
So there's low income inequality in Sweden. The gap between the highest earners and the lowest earners is a fraction of what it is here. That's going to be a large part of what you're describing, because the highest earners here are not only engendering massive inequality, they're also often paying less proportionately in tax than people who earn much less than they do. And they're not paying anywhere near as much on their assets and wealth as we are on our income.
But the whole country, James, is based upon equality, you know.
Yeah.
It's in the
Scandinavian DNA, isn't it?
The Scandinavian DNA, you know, and, you know, to break it really, really down, James, you know, it's women are equal to men and men are equal to women, and that is enforced across the board, James, you know. Mm. So it's a much more equal, fair country, and compared to here,
I think in Sweden you get well looked after when you retire as well, don't you?
You get fantastically, and you know, compared to Norway, do you know the Norwegian government, they have 1 million kroner for everybody that goes into pension. That's what they have in their pot.
Well, that's the wealth fund that they've got, isn't it? That's the oil, I think, originally.
But Scotland would have been the Saudi Arabia of the north if we.
It's good to share, Keith. And listen, we're not opening up that. What is it? The Midlothian question. We're not opening up that box of frogs today, or indeed that Pandora's box. But yeah, I mean, things can be done differently. And yet, I don't know how big an obstacle to this the the media coverage is, because we're living in a country now where people who are directly and personally responsible for the state of the nation, i.e. the people who either did or supported and cheered the 14 years that brought you austerity, Brexit, Boris Johnson and Liz Truss, are now sharpening their knives for the people who haven't fixed everything yet in the space of about a year and a bit. And they will need to raise taxes to fix it, and when they announce that, they'll get the mother of all kickings again. It's as if people can't stick their head out the window, look around and say, crikey, we need to raise some more money. Oh, just get rid of all the immigrants then. That's why it's such attractive rhetoric. It's why people who know much better are going all in on it, because the alternative is A, to admit that you made a terrible mistake by supporting Brexit, Boris Johnson, austerity and Liz Truss, and B, to concede that you as somebody wealthy or somebody working for somebody wealthy are going to have to do a little bit more of the heavy lifting now than you have been doing previously. So much easier just to pay someone to write a column attacking asylum seekers. Keeps the population subdued. Keeps hoi polloi at bay. 12:46 is the time.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Identifying the ethnicity and nationality of a criminal suspect. Tell me, how exactly does that tackle community tensions?
Sheila Fogarty on LBC.
As a small business owner, you've got to be ready for the ups and the downs. Ready to think on your feet, ready to be rushed off your feet, ready to make the big decisions and make the tea. Two sugars in mind? Ta. Ready to be there for your customers whenever they need you? Well, ditto. Virgin Media Broadband's ready for anything business can throw at it. Yeah, it's business ready broadband. Search Virgin Media Business Broadband.
At TfO, we're opening up more of London for everyone with step-free access. We're continuing to improve accessibility at many of our stations, and now over 200 stations and counting have step-free access, including the entire Elizabeth Line, DLR and all tram stops. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Psst, have you heard?
About what?
About Boots Optician's Ultimate Eye Test with OptiMap Scan.
Why are you whispering?
I think it's for VIPs. It's an in-depth look into your eye that can detect health conditions that other eye scans might miss.
You know, the whole family's already had one done. You should too.
Okay, I'll book one now.
Why are you still whispering?
Don't know. Can't seem to stop.
Ask about OptiMap when you book an eye test at Boots Opticians and see what's possible. OptiMap available in selected stores. Additional charges apply.
Because you never know what little pickles they'll get themselves into. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Hurry, the Hillary summer sale ends soon. Don't miss out on up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, you can still get £50 off your electric blind order, an easy way to control your blinds. But be quick, these offers end 26th of August. And if you find the same product with the same service for less, we'll match the price. Book your free in-home appointment today. Visit hillarys.co.uk. The Hillary summer sale ends soon. Don't miss it. Conditions apply.
Huh. Have you ever wondered what a sandwich sounds like? Not much to it, is there? Unless, of course, it's a Walker's sandwich. Mmm, that is good. Now that's what a sarnie should sound like. Go all crispin with Walkers. Delicious.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
My confidence is not at its highest when we found ourselves discussing matters fiscal, so I probably won't adopt the irritating, condescending tone that I normally adopt when dismantling texts or messages to the programme that I consider to be a little bit ignorant. Which is very difficult for me. It comes horribly naturally to me to do that condescending dismissal. But I'm pretty sure you don't pay capital gains tax on your primary residence when you sell it. So it's not the same as capital gains tax, as a couple of people have suggested. It is literally, essentially extending capital gains tax to include your primary residence, but only on the profit, of course, that you've made, the capital gain. There are all sorts of potential problems with that, but none that I can currently see as being impossible to iron out, except the renovation question. i.e. you spent a lot of money doing up your house 20 years ago, but you didn't keep all the receipts because you didn't realise you were going to be taxed on the amount that you have made since buying that house, and between buying it and selling it. The difference in value between the purchase price and the sale price is going to have been heavily influenced the more renovation and work that you've done on the house. But hey-ho, on we go. John is in Hungerford. John, what's your wizard wheeze?
Hi, James. So I think that we are probably taxing the wrong thing. The majority of tax comes through income tax, right? And that really sort of stems back to when the bulk of wealth generation was coming from people working in farms, agriculture, whatever industry.
Wages.
And yeah, exactly, right? But now, I know it's not exactly the dawn of AI. Technology has been doing more and more of the heavy lifting for years and years. Mm. But that's translated into profit for companies as opposed to revenue generation for the state. So what I would propose is that, well, ultimately reduce income tax altogether, but start charging...
That's £277 billion that you've just blown up in smoke.
No, no. Eventually.
Yeah, okay.
Give me a chance.
Okay.
Right? So what I'm suggesting is that we put a tax on the spend from companies going to companies like OpenAI, like Amazon for AWS and various other technologies, right? So they're obviously reporting on that spend, so it's possible to tax it, essentially. And... because that is where things are going. People are going to lose jobs to AI. That's a sort of matter of fact.
So these companies need an entirely new model of taxation for profit-making entities that are going to be replacing wage earners.
Yes, that's what I think.
Yes, I can see why you think that. I don't know that I'd come as far as abolishing income tax altogether. I think that people still earning a wage would have to pay some tax. But how would this work? Who would their customers be? People earning wages.
This is where this has to go to.
Oh, right? You're scaring me.
So I'm a fan of a universal basic income.
Yes, so am I.
Right?
I think,
and that would fund it, right? So if you could, because there is going to be hundreds and hundreds of billions going into technology. We can just see it now, right? We're just with the amount of money that companies like Nvidia are making, that's just kind of the prequel to what people are going to be spending on things like OpenAI, things like...
This is early. This isn't something we could do, that Rachel Reeves could do in the next budget, is it? But she could certainly start movement in that direction.
She could certainly add 20% VAT, effectively a VAT, on what companies are paying on those technologies.
But that ends up being paid by the customer of that company.
Yeah, I guess that's always going to be the argument, right? And
it's the truth, I think. But yeah, no, you're right. But except taking it, I don't like value-added taxes because someone on 100 grand is paying a much tinier fraction of their income than somebody on 20 grand. I prefer, you know, they're not progressive, I suppose, is what I'm trying to say. But there's some stuff there. There's quite a lot to chew on this hour, actually. Thank you, John. 12:53 is the time. I think this is the most recent figure, 23-24. So if the £277 billion came into the Treasury via income tax, how much do you think came in via capital taxes or wealth taxes? So if we raise £277 billion on income tax and £179 billion on national insurance contributions and another £169 billion on VAT, £97 billion on corporation tax, and on it goes. Where does it slot into that breakdown? Capital taxes. Remind me to tell you before I go. Kevin's in Southwark. Kevin, what would you like to say?
Oh, well, good morning.
Hello,
thanks
Kevin.
For taking me off.
You're very welcome.
Yeah.
It's the morning something.
Okay, right. I'm an oldie. So I'm one of the pensioners, right? I'm 73, and I think that the triple lock for people like me who've got a decent income, the triple lock should go on people like me. So that would save the government a lot of money. But they should also look after those people, those pensioners of my age who only live on
state pension.
The state pension.
So it's a sort of means testing of the triple lock.
Basically, yeah. Because the reason I say this is because I lived in France for 30 years, and at the end of that, my first year of pension was in France, and when I came back here, same pension hadn't really changed, I had a huge reduction in tax. What did I get with that huge reduction? I got a worse health service and more expensive transport in Britain.
Oh, I see. So you paid more tax on your pension in France than you did here?
Oh, God, yes. So much so that when I came back here and I got my first year of tax from the tax... I phoned up the tax office and said, is this a mistake?
Yeah.
And they said, no, it's not. That's the tax you pay.
The problem is, they tell us, and you know this as well as I do, they tell us that it is political suicide to come after the pensioners.
Well, might be, but I mean,
God, they're not going to commit political suicide, Kevin. You are an endangered species. You see, a pensioner who thinks that pensioners get too much. But I love the way you also say not all pensioners. Make sure you look after the ones who are having to survive exclusively on the state pension. But you're flirting with something that I think is going to gather in popularity in the coming years, which is the idea that even the state pension itself shouldn't be going to people who've got high incomes.
Yeah, I think the other point about this as
means test the pension is what I'm suggesting.
Means test, exactly. Yeah. I think the other thing is that if you look at the overall tax take as a share of national income in France and Germany, in these countries, it's, 4 or 5% higher than this country.
Yeah, but no one knows that. Everyone thinks we're taxed more. It's like immigration.
Exactly.
Everyone thinks we've got more asylum seekers and higher taxes, but we've got fewer asylum seekers and lower taxes.
But the
He's been scuppered. I was enjoying that. You got a wonderful laugh. Kevin, your phone line went, if you can still hear me, but we'll talk again, I hope. I'm still keeping a bit of tension up. So I'll read out all the figures, but except capital taxes, and you have to guess where it slots into the figure. 277, income tax, billion. 179 billion, national insurance. 97 billion, corporation tax. 44 billion, council tax. 26 billion, business rates. 25 billion on fuel duty. 21 billion on tobacco and alcohol duties. 124 billion on other receipts. And 97 billion on other taxes. I don't know what those two would be. But somewhere in that rundown, capital taxes slot in. And I wonder, most obviously, where you think it sits in relation to income taxes. Thank you, Kevin. Staying south of the river. Ray's in Vauxhall. Ray, what would you like to say?
Yeah, hi, James.
You've got a minute. Sheila's here. Make it snappy. Oh,
okay, right. So I think Labour have boxed themselves in the corner. They take a populist route by saying they're not going to raise taxes on working people, in quotations.
Yeah.
But, you know, a popular theme on the left is wealth taxes. I was going to talk about inheritance tax and a proposal that they could actually widen. Because only at the moment, people in the southeast pay inheritance tax largely. It's a couple of percent of the population pay inheritance tax because of the values of the property.
Yes.
We'll lower the thresholds, tax more of the country at a lower inheritance tax rate, not 40%, which it is at the moment. And then the revenue would shoot up in terms of people who pay inheritance tax and maybe at a more affordable rate, which they don't have to actually sell the house to pay the tax.
It's on the list. Is it regressive? Because it would potentially penalise people with less, more than it would penalise people with more. I don't know, but we'll return to it on another occasion, I'm sure. Alid's been in touch to say, I've really enjoyed this calling. You sound surprised, Alid. What feelings do you normally have when I'm conducted radio? It's very odd. But I liked it as well. It's a bit theoretical, wasn't it? Yeah. If you missed any of it, you can listen back. That's the good news on Catch Up on both Global Player and the LBC app, where you can stay up to date on all the top stories and opinions. You can also, of course, listen to a range of podcasts, such as James O'Brien Daily, an hour of the best bits from this very show every day. Download it now, the official LBC app. It's free and it's in your app store. Tom Swarbrick will be with you at 4. But now on LBC, it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you very much, James. JD Vance says freedom of speech and human rights in the UK are being weakened. Uh-huh. A couple of examples in... Was that you sniggering? A couple of examples in Scotland today would suggest he's right, I'll have you know, Mr. O'Brien. On universal credit, who are the 1 million new recipients? And why should we worry about the benefits bill? Should we worry about the benefits bill? But first up,
at the moment, what the government are trying to balance and manage is a distrust in policing, a distrust in the criminal justice system.
Hampshire's Police and Crime Commissioner says she can't be certain that revealing a suspect's nationality and ethnicity won't lead to hate crime, but she supports it. Do you?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, President Zelensky is due to hold virtual talks with President Trump and EU leaders to discuss the war in Ukraine. Mr. Zelensky says Ukraine and its allies must work together to pressure Moscow into ending its invasion. Russian Vladimir Putin will meet Mr. Trump in Alaska on Friday. Dr. Alan Mendoza is from the security think tank the Henry Jackson Society and has told LBC News European leaders can influence Donald Trump's thinking.
It's well documented that the president, people think he's got set views. Actually, he is capable of changing his views quite dramatically on subjects, and I suspect that a reasoned approach from Europe today may well have some impact on how he approaches that meeting with Vladimir Putin. For example, if we didn't have this briefing and they walked in and Putin, you know, sort of slapped his back, it might be that he went down Putin's route. But to go in with a set of questions or points to raise makes that much more difficult for Putin.
Three teenagers have been charged with the murder of a man found dead on the Isle of Sheppey in Kent. A 16-year-old girl and two boys aged 14 and 15 are accused of killing Alexander Cashford in Leysdown-on-Sea on Sunday. A 12-year-old girl, also arrested in connection with the incident, remains in custody. The Home Secretary Yvette Cooper has welcomed plans for police to share suspects' ethnicity and nationality with the public. The new interim guidelines follow a series of controversial cases in which authorities were accused of a cover-up of suspects' backgrounds. It's hoped the change will combat misinformation on social media. Wales's First Minister has announced the death of Senedd member Hevin David at the age of 47. He'd been a Labour MS for Caerphilly since 2016. A statement from Eleanor Morgan says she's extremely saddened by the sudden news. LBC's reporter Caitlin Palm has more details.
Sir Keir Starmer said the entire Labour movement will be joining him in grieving the loss of Hevin David. The Prime Minister called him a powerful voice for the people of Wales and a committed public servant who dedicated his life to making sure every person and community in Wales had the opportunities and support they deserve.
The average two-year fixed mortgage rate has dipped below 5% for the first time since before Liz Truss's mini-budget in 2022. Last week, interest rates were cut for the fifth time since last August. Moneyfacts, which gathered the data, says it shows lenders are competing more aggressively. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 15 at 91.63. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 15. LBC weather, another warm and sunny afternoon for many. Some thunderstorms developing later. Highs of 33 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible, and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. Now, police have been issued with new guidance, they're being encouraged essentially, to disclose the ethnicity and nationality of suspects who are charged in high-profile cases. Now, you might remember the incident in Liverpool after the celebration of LFC after they had won the championship at the league. And there was the ramming incident in the city centre. And before the individual was charged, the police chose to reveal that he was a white local man. This goes further. This is saying that suspects, even after charging, in high-profile cases, you can give the detail of their ethnicity and nationality. The interim guidance from the NPCC aims to reduce, they say, to reduce the risk to public safety where there are high levels of misinformation about an incident. The Home Secretary, Yvette Cooper, says the guidance is a step forward, adding that the government and the public want greater transparency. My question to you is whether this greater transparency is needed, and also what unintended consequences it might lead to. Earlier on, speaking to Nick Ferrari at breakfast, Policing Minister Dame Diana Johnson welcomed the new guidance, saying police should consider revealing the ethnicity of suspects.
Yes, so the College of Policing have produced some interim guidance for police forces, which is saying that nationality and ethnicity or ethnicity should be released when a person is charged. We normally see names and addresses given at that stage. We're very keen to be as open and as transparent as possible. We welcome what the College of Policing are saying. The key thing in all of this is we want to make sure that victims of crimes get justice through the courts.
This, just to remind you that this latest incarnation of this question, because we know that after the Southport killings, the Southport murders, this became an issue and became a very prominent issue in government as well. But more recently, it comes after the authorities were accused of hiding the identities of two men, reported to be Afghan asylum seekers, charged over the alleged rape of a 12-year-old in Warwickshire. That's a more recent example of a case that might prove this kind of sensitivity. Earlier on, I spoke to Donna Jones. She's the National Criminal Justice Lead for the Association of Police and Crime Commissioners. She is the PCC for Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. I began simply by asking her whether she thinks this encouragement of police to reveal the ethnicity and nationality of suspects is a good thing or a bad thing.
Well, I really welcome this. I've campaigned for this and called for this for the last couple of years, so I am very pleased with the decision.
What do you think is its, tell me the merit you think is in this guidance?
Well, I think one of the big problems that we've had with protests and with the growing dissent from the public towards policing, towards the government, particularly the Home Office, with the management of the flow of illegal immigrants into the country, and then crime that is perceived to be linked to those individuals, has often been people's perception about who's committing crime and what's going on, particularly with some of the sexual offending. Now, previously, the police had always taken an approach that, you know, where you have information about a suspect that is going to aggravate the public and perhaps cause community tension, there would have been an approach to withhold that information because they didn't want to inflame community, you know, issues. Actually, now we realise that that doesn't work, that those issues are being created anyway, that the information that's being shared online, some of it is disinformation, those tensions are being created. So the police no longer clarifying the situation is not helping. It is, in fact, making things far worse. So this is why people such as myself have been saying that we need to put it out there. If it is a rape or a sexual assault that's been committed by somebody that's been in the country for just a handful of months, there's no good in trying to hide it because it will come out anyway eventually. And when it does come out, what ends up happening is the public's absolute distrust towards the police, the Crown Prosecution Service, the courts, the government wider. So actually we need to be on the front foot here. The police and the courts need to be sharing the information, as to the probation service and the Home Office with their quarterly and annual publication of data. But what the police and councils and other partners must now be doing is wrapping the support around communities to manage that tension, which inevitably will be created anyway.
You focus in on sexual assault and rape cases, but the most recent example that we have, or the most notable example that we have of this decision being made, admittedly pre-charge, was the Liverpool ramming of the people after the championship celebrations for Liverpool fans. Immediately, we had a kind of post-Southport, well, who is it? Who's in the car? Who is he? Oh, social media goes crazy. And the police made the decision to say he was a white local man. Is there a danger, in your view, where not just about these instances, but just generally in terms of social cohesion, where we start to break down into sort of granular detail people's identity, when in fact the identity we should be encouraging is community identity?
Well, that is a good point. And I hope that through evolution of approach towards managing these issues and the public's understanding, that we start to rebuild trust and we get to the exact outcome